It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Richard Campbell is here. We'll talk about Moment 5, some other new features we haven't yet mentioned, AI, Microsoft 365. What's with the Dropbox integration? And yes, there's an Xbox segment in which Paul will rail once again about the lack of Activision games on Game Pass. You know, we come to expect it every week. Windows Weekly is next.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Richard Campbell, episode 878, recorded Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. If you build it, you are dumb. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show we cover the latest news from Microsoft with these cats right here. Mr. Richard Campbell of Run As Radio. He is in...
I was only a baby in the 60s. I don't know what that was.
We don't know. It's some sort of hand gesture. He's in Sweden, in Arlanda, which is, of course, the home of the airport for Stockholm. So we're just going to say Stockholm, yeah. I think. Yeah,
good place.
Are you going or coming?
It's the East Boston of Stockholm.
I'm on my way home. So was in Örebro yesterday and did the show. And then
nice.
Had a nice drive across the country, visited some castles and things. And then now it's the evening.
Lovely.
And I fly out tomorrow morning.
I had lunch at home.
I had soup. That's Paul.
Is it Swedish meatballs? I like salad. I don't know what we're talking about.
Therrott.com is his home. That's where he lives. And together we are going to discuss the latest from Microsoft.
Bum, yes. Bum, bum.
Ba-da-da-bum. What is the latest from old Microsoft?
Oh, Leo, there's so much going on today.
It's an Amish day.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. Leo's been dealing with me for like 15 years or something. He assumed that was sarcastic. No, there really is stuff going on today. That was my mistake. There's some good stuff.
So what? So what's happening?
Sorry. Leo was like, oh, here we go. Again. I'm like, boy, oh, no. I'm sorry.
Happening.
Sorry.
Nothing's
my happening. Mistake. My mistake. Are no, we, there's stuff happening.
Yeah. Are we talking big news?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. So we've been waiting for these Qualcomm Snapdragon X Elite chips to show up. I had talked about going out to New York and going through a briefing that many other people also went through, not seeing anything worrisome and seeing lots of good things. And one of the things I couldn't talk about is that they also discussed
Benchy
another
chipset
called it. Well, yes, Benchy Marks, but also the Snapdragon X Plus. Right.
X-plus.
So they promised me they were not going to pull an Intel and have too many tiers or SKUs or whatever. But actually, there are going to be four SKUs altogether, at least at launch. Three of the X Elite and one of the X Plus. The X Plus is a lower end chip, although on all the same benchmarks that they always tout, it's not all benchmarks, right? But it still comes out ahead of the, you know, Apple M3, the high end AI chipsets from Intel and AMD as well. So It has those same advantages. For PC makers, the advantage is this will be less expensive, right? Because if it's not obvious, these things are going to target the kind of premium Ultrabook part of the market, right? And we don't have anything with regards to pricing or anything like that, but I think it's fair to assume that, especially based on previous Qualcomm-based PCs, et cetera, these are all going to be north of $1,000. So maybe this one comes in a lot closer to 1,000 or even just under 1,000, depending on the device. We'll see.
So we have the world famous explaining what the name means diagram.
This was not something they showed us. Oh, maybe it was, actually. Was it?
Snapdragon branded products are products of Qualcomm Technologies and or its subsidiaries. I'm guessing
this
is their slide.
Yes. Qualcomm, company of the future.
Company of the future.
So, so unfortunately, poetry, design language, there's all kinds of examples of, like, if you have to explain it, maybe it's not as good as you think it is. and I would say that for this branding, it's like, yikes. So, you know, if you're familiar with Intel or AMD chipsets, you know that there's like a naming convention they use, and it's always terrible. And or Qualcomm landed right in the right space for that, because this is terrible. But it's meant to describe to someone who cares about this stuff the generation, the tier. I remember there are four of those.
Elite or SKU. Plus.
Yeah, it's crazy. So
there's X Elite and X Plus.
Yeah, when you look at these, you look at these numbers, it's very clear that it's exactly one kind of die, and these numbers are based on testing.
Oh, it's binning, think? This is all about bins.
They're not going to say that, but that was my assumption. 100% binning. In other words, these things land where, like, in the sense that manufacturing chipsets is still a little bit magic, bit science. They're not all exactly the same. And these things are going to run at they are stable at some frequency, and they deliver some level of performance across whatever benchmarks, and thus we will name them differently. And that was my assumption.
Snapdragon X is the series, and we know this is generation one, so that's going to be the same for everything. Snapdragon X1.
Yes, that's right.
And then there's two tiers, Elite or Plus.
Right, so ERP.
ERP.
Right. And Elite meaning all 12 cores work, and P meaning... Right. 10 of the 12 cores.
But that's not enough granularity, so they've added a SKU number, which obviously is completely directly correlated.
So these range from 64 to 84 for this first gen. The 64 is for the Plus.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The Snapdragon X Plus and then the lowest end X Elite are almost identical. I'm struggling to remember what the difference was between them. Oh, it's the number of cores. The X Elite has 12 cores.
Right. And then it's clock speed
versus 10.
They just bench the clock speed plus the boost speed. And that was
there's the so when you go up from Plus to the lowest level Elite, you're going up two cores. You're going from 10 processor cores to 12. When you go up from that one to the mid level X Elite, the difference is this dual core boost capability, right? Where it can run faster for some unsustained amount
of time. All sounds like benchmark data. Like, they just bench it, and if it can do it, then you mark it up.
And then the highest end one is a higher clock speed, a higher dual core boost speed, and the GPU is larger teraflops?
higher teraflops,
I guess. More floppage.
More floppage. And then everything else is the same.
So, there was an article today.
Scores are the same. CPU.
There was an article today.
I know. Listen, I don't want to. I don't want to give this guy any airtime. That guy is a nut, and he does not deserve this attention.
Okay, good.
The fact that this was spread on Tech Meme and then everyone's writing about it is like, guys, come on.
I did not bookmark it because I feel like we'll see when we get them. Anything else is speculation.
Right? So just to give you a broad overview of what he's referring to, someone wrote an article that said they're lying. These are all made up. Everything they say is made up. The performance is not this good. And it's one of those things I know for a fact, so here's the thing. What benchmarks are benchmarks. I mean, whatever. These devices are going to go out in the world. I always qualified this. Like, we're going to review these things.
Yeah.
People are going to run benchmarks. They're going to compare them to each other, to Intel and AMD PCs. They're going to compare them to M whatever Max.
Will we be getting them, I guess, is the question.
Yep.
Because Qualcomm's making this very aggressive claim that they best the Apple M3, the latest Apple processor. So
in the benchmarks they care to mention. So, for example, the with the M3 in particular, the way that the Snapdragon chipsets beat it are, I think, multi-core benchmarks, whatever those are.
Okay.
Single core is very close. I think the M might actually be a little bit ahead. It doesn't beat out the M3 Max, the M3 Pro necessarily, although it's competitive.
Oh, it's the base M3 that it beats out.
It's the base M3. I just want to be clear about that. On the PC side, the x86 side, they're comparing them to different chips, different benchmarks. So it's a little screwy. But if you think about what the high end of that market is, they're always going at the high end chips, though. So they're not screwing around that much. But Intel Core Ultra, which is a first gen AI PC chipset, kind of in a side family of the core, the normal core, comes in 7 and 9 variants. I now have a 9 in. I've only had 7 so far. The typical one for the Core Ultra 7 is like a 7155, I think. I don't remember the 9 model number, but the 9 is more powerful, like as we've shown on the Core I chips as well. And then on the AMD side, they're comparing it to like the 7900/8900 series HS. These are HS on AMD, not a hardware guy, but is sort of like the what used to be H, right, on the PC side. We now have just, I think they're all just P now, right? The one thing in the middle, they don't do U and H or whatever the nomenclature was, whatever it was. So they are comparing it to very high-end chips, so to speak. Then again, I mean, anyone, and I had this discussion with people the day I visited Qualcomm, not people at Qualcomm, but people like me, nerds, that anyone who has used these devices that are based on the Intel Core Ultra chipsets, you know, it's kind of underwhelming, right? Battery life has gone down. Performance is middling. We know that the MPU performance is terrible. They're promising to fix that by the end of this year. AMD is a little bit less well known because there just aren't that many chips or PCs out in the world with these things yet. But look, they're all in the mix. They're all in different places. If we're being honest with ourselves, I'm sure if you could find a real Microsoft fanatic, they would love for this thing just to kind of destroy the M3 or whatever that means. But realistically speaking, as long as it's comparable for the people that want a Windows PC, and having used this MacBook Air I've had now for what, I don't know, 5 or 6 weeks, whatever it's been, I want a Windows PC. I got to tell you, I love this thing on so many levels, and my review is going to be glowing. But where it falls apart for me, honestly, is the macOS user experience. I just don't like it. It's inconsistent. It has some gaping holes.
And there are not enough ads in there. And I think they need...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Disappointed.
That's actually what I meant by gaping hole. I'm glad you were able to figure that out. No, I know. Listen,
it's a matter of personal taste.
Well,
because I strongly prefer the Mac over the Windows
it's
interface.
Absolutely
so. It's a matter of personal taste.
I just find because of there are no workarounds to some of the problems I have that I can't. There are just things I can do in Windows I can't on the Mac, and I maybe there are third party utilities for some of this stuff. Maybe I don't know. I've tried to do things the Apple way, and I really like. I should be clear. I love some of it. Or some of it's fantastic. And it's made me a full screen convert, which is kind of weird. I kind of rejected all that stuff.
No, I love that.
Yeah. And that's something we just don't have on the Windows side effectively. There's good and bad.
We can fight it out when your review comes out.
Okay.
No, I think the main thing to point out at this point
is overwhelmingly positive.
It's one thing to say benchmarks outperform the M3, and I'll grant them that. It's another thing is how use it and what software are you using? And so, you know, if you've got Windows on ARM and you don't have all the programs you want, I mean,
I don't think that
Silicon's been out for a few years. I think they've got, you know, all the stuff that's important is moved over.
That's not really the issue it used to be.
That's good to know.
But you're right. But you are right in that it's real world experience. You know, like it's one.
Yeah,
by the way,
that's all that really matters.
The story you referenced earlier was that.
Yeah.
Well, but this person's claim is that they're lying about the benchmarks.
Right.
It's like, guys, we're going to have everyone's going to get to run their own benchmarks on real hardware. Yeah. We're going to see what those numbers are. And by the way,
the truth
actual
will come
benchmark
out.
Numbers have leaked. Those aren't fake. Those are.
It would be pretty dumb of Qualcomm to lie on benchmarks when they're about to release a product.
You're going
to
get busted every time. Like, don't be crazy. Right?
Yeah. And by the way, this is one hit away from being dead. So. If they pulled that nonsense here, and then it came out, and, oh my God, they lied, and it's completely different.
Yeah.
Guess what? It's over, folks. It's over.
Yeah,
that would be a strategic error of epic proportions.
Yeah.
So
and for nothing, everybody wants this chipset to exist. It just needs to be good.
Yep.
I get that you're carefully positioning it to be the best. It's not even essential.
The way PCs are today, and I include Macs in this list, is that for most people, we have our opinions about user interfaces and which system's better and all that kind of stuff. But we run apps, we get work done, we walk on it, we move on to the next thing, whatever it is. And like I said, I don't think most people are sitting there with a clock, you know, a timer saying, you know, this one's 1/10 of a second faster to do this, and this one's 1/10 of a second faster to do this other thing. You know, we want to get work done. And, like I said, I think the goal here is we'll see how it lands on benchmarks. We will, because everyone's going to do that. But I think the important thing is, what's the real experience in real world? And we've got the years of work that Microsoft's done to improve all the compatibility and performance, yada, yada. And then finally, we have Qualcomm showing up on the hardware side. So it's going to come together. We're going to find out. I've yet to see anything to make me concerned is how I would put it.
And all of YouTube will
create both synthetic and actual benchmarks of various applications, various, you know, processes. And we're going to know.
I'll tell you what our audience cares about. They're going to say, well, how do Paul and Richard feel using it? And does it, you know, does it feel snappy? Does it do things fast? Does it do the stuff?
Does it give me a little tingle in my belly? Yeah. You know?
Well, by the way, you're sort of joking, but there's something to that because honestly, there are these logical hard numbers and things like that. You can say, look, I've averaged X number of whatever hours of battery life. This is an objective fact. It's my workload, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But there is that kind of more emotional side to something like this that has to do with the design of the machine. You know, some of the appealing things about this Mac, the MacBook Air, is that it doesn't have fans, doesn't make any sound, never gets hot, never coughs, stalls, stutters, pauses. It just, whatever you want to do, it just does. I loaded up Resident Evil.
The least dramatic machine possible, right?
Like it's no drama. I played this thing all the way through until I couldn't play it anymore because I played the free version. I played the first segment, whatever. And this thing, the battery life went down a little bit. The machine didn't get hot. It didn't make a peep. It was fine. Mm. And by the way, while I was doing that, I still had everything running in the background. I didn't close anything. Yeah. You know, every time I open the lid, it comes on. Which I know is a ridiculous thing to say. That's how a PC
should
work.
There's a lot of laptops that don't work that way.
I have dozens of laptops here. Let me tell you something. It's a roulette wheel, and it's a roulette wheel on the same PC. Yeah. I have an HP Dragonfly Pro that I love, and it is. I could give you six possible things that could happen when this thing when I open that lid.
Any given time,
one of which is anytime. It is unpredictable. So there are things, I think the good thing about the Mac for me was that it kind of opened my eyes to some things I had kind of taken for granted on the PC side. And it made me realize like I need to watch for this stuff because this can be better. And that's the type of thing I'll be looking for on these Qualcomm based PCs, right? The instant on promise we've always had, the 10 to 20 hours of battery life we've always been promised, the, you know, effortless, hitchless performance, the compatibility, yada, 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 you know, all the things. So
if they really are pulling down 45 tops, mm-hmm. then that's LLM class performance. Like you should be able to run a pretty damn large on device language model.
Fast. Which, by the way, I bet it does that great. But if I open Notepad and I have to wait 3 seconds for it, this machine
you're done.
It's dead to me. I mean it.
Well, it is
it can't.
Remember with hyper-threading where as soon as you had a couple of different apps running and it would start to bonk between the processors and none of the benchmarks ever showed that, but in normal real work behavior, that interaction became a huge issue. They re-architected the CPU after that. So this is a great question is what is the interrupt level going over to the NPU? Like how do they shift memory on those things? Like, and until we're really doing work on it, until you're in a flow, calling between different bits of software that are a normal part of work, you're not going to find those kinds of things.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to find out. I expect to have a number of these come through the house this year, right? I mean,
yeah, this
I'm
year.
A little bit forward to your Candy Crush benchmarks, really. Yeah.
No, but really, when are we going to see these? That's my question.
Yeah. So no one has said explicitly, and I privately or publicly, but what they've said, what they've been saying, Qualcomm is mid-year, but we know Microsoft is going to announce Qualcomm-based Surface laptop and or devices. Anyway, we know devices. There was a leak.
A20.
Yeah, right before build. It will probably be part of the build keynote or something as well, I would imagine, right? I just, you know, at least mention it.
But that doesn't mean they'll give a date either. It'll just be on pre-order. We'll ship them.
We'll have some idea of what an actual machine looks like. We've seen some leaks of some Lenovo PCs as well.
I'll bet it's silver with a screen.
Yes. So the Lenovo, I don't know if this came up last week or happened since, but the first one that leaked was like an IdeaPad or something like that. It's like a slim, you know, the type of thing that would be fanless, right?
Right.
The second one,
that yoga style Lenovo.
Yeah. The second one was a more typical ThinkPad T-series laptop, like a T40 or whatever S, which, you know, used to be the slim thing before the X1 series came around.
But all those T's are tanks, right? Like they're
designed. They can be, but the S is the thinner one, right? So the S1's a little thinner, but it could have full size ports. Yep. I mean, that's, you know, it targets a business market and blah, 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 whatever. So
Can kill a small animal in times of need.
Well, okay. So according to a source I do trust, there will be 13 and 15 inch Surface laptops built on some Qualcomm X something Snapdragon, right? We know from a leak that the Pro, the Surface Pro, will at least be on X Plus, because that's what leaked. And we already have people like, but I wanted to get the X Elite version. It's like, you don't even know what these things are. Shut up. You know, let's just see what it looks like. Relax. Yeah. But I would, you know, Surface, I mean, obviously the goal there has always been, and sometimes they have achieved, fanless, right? Without any, you know, active cooling. That's
this Studio 2 is a beautiful machine, but fanless, it is not.
Yeah. I mean, one of the tough things for me is, like, since I got the MacBook Air, I've gotten two so far. I'm getting another one's arriving today. I get these like Core Ultra 7 or Core Ultra 9 laptops in, and they're beautiful. I mean, they're beautiful. And you turn the thing on and it's like, you're like, oh God, like you,
here it goes.
It's tough. Like, and I think we have a little bit of, I don't know, PTSD in the PC world with this stuff. Like we're just, you know, get a little twitchy with it. But like I said, I just want this to be in the ballpark. It doesn't have to be better all across the board, et cetera, but it'd be nice. I'm not going to complain if it is, but you know, I would like a Surface laptop or similar that's just like the MacBook Air, right? But running Windows. That's what I want.
Right. Yeah, that's what you want. You want a MacBook Air that runs Windows first person.
And I know. Put down the keyboard, everybody. I know I can do that with Parallels and blah, blah, blah. And I will, just to try it. But I'm not going to force
you. You'd rather not.
No. I mean, I'm going to test it. I haven't yet, by the way. I've used it on multiple Macs in the past. But I... for right now, I'm just, you know, before I write the review, I just want to, or publish a review, I just want to use the Mac, right, for the Mac. Mm-hmm. So we'll get there. And I don't really...
Brilliant.
The ability to run Windows and Windows apps on a Mac is obviously useful on a number of levels, but the notion that I buy a Mac and then run only Windows, like in virtualization, is yes, possible, and B, stupid. I would just not do that. But, so that's my take on that. Maybe you disagree. I don't know. Let's see. Oh, and by the way, one thing that, why do they have four SKUs, right? Like, why did this happen? Other than the fact that maybe they were seeing unreliable results in the manufacturing.
And no, this is a bidding problem. They want to make sure they use 90% of the die, and making four SKUs does it. That's why the SKU comes out so late.
And you're right. When I look at this SKU comparison table, it's so obviously binning. Because this is, you know, I mean, they're basically the same chip. It's pretty clear. And they can only run it at a certain clock speed. 100%. If it's, you know, so that's pretty obvious.
The X Plus is interesting to me. That one, they literally have fewer cores. So in that case,
the cores off. They had defective cores.
Right. Okay.
Well, what they're saying is, you know, and this was the whole Surface thing. You know, when Microsoft took that radical step to compete with their best partners and make their own PC, there's this kind of yin yang, good, bad aspect to the whole PC market where we have all this choice. And then the bad side is we have all this choice. It's like nobody knows what the hell any of this stuff means. Oh. And it's like, could we just here's an idea. Just make the best one and sell that, you know, but you know, one of the promises of the PC market is that we have a range of not just choice, but also prices. Right. So having an X Plus chipset allows them to charge the PC maker less and allows the PC maker to have a lower end product. Not that it's going to be a cheap piece of like educational plastic or anything, but maybe something that's in the $800 to $1,000 range instead of the $1,200 to $1,500 range or whatever those, wherever these things may lay. We don't
know. And the performance range is not that high. I'll defy you to really know the difference between that Plus unit and the top Elite unit.
Yeah. Oh, I have to.
Right, exactly. Using where it's like, damn it, if only I had 12 cores, 10's not cutting.
Everybody asterisk listening to watching this podcast, and the asterisk is not literally everybody, but most people, like we all think the same way. We're like, we have to have the big one, right?
Yeah.
Like I bought a MacBook Air, not a MacBook Pro, but when I bought it, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to max out the RAM. You know, like that's the way we think. It's kind of, you can justify it. It's like a future proofing kind of a thing. You can, whatever makes you sleep at night is fine, but there is a market for, is this the good one? Yeah, I want the good one. You know, that kind of thing. I came in the door because of the cheap one, but what I want is the...
Yeah, the
I'm interested in the price range.
Well, it's...
But I have to say, I have had the M1 Max, the M1 Plus Max, the Mac, the M2 Mac, the M3 Max Mac.
Right.
I can't.
And you must know a dramatic difference between all those.
As you know, there,
yes.
There is no difference. There is, I mean, I know when I like, okay, so I compile my Lisp code and it might run 50% faster.
You went from a half a second to a quarter second.
Yeah, but it's a few milliseconds, and it's just not something you would ever notice. I mean, in other words, you can notice it if you're looking at granular numbers, but you're not noticing it when your fingers are on the keys. You really aren't. You know.
Yeah.
It's just not.
Also, I was sort of talking around that earlier. I mean, I think day to day use, like when I use the MacBook Air, I don't notice anything, and that's the lack of drama to a Windows guy is kind of noticeable, right? The lack of drama adds up over time. But the flip side of that is if you encounter like a little problem here and then a little problem here and then a little problem here and that keeps going and it's different things, especially, or it's the same thing. It doesn't matter. That adds up too, you know, and that's what they have to try to get past. And we'll see how it does. What you want is that I notice there are no problems, not I notice there are constant problems.
Well, and it takes a while to notice there are no problems because you just.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully.
And there are people who load up 100 Chrome tabs and then say, oh, look, this thing's slow.
Yeah, but you know what? Not to keep going on about the Mac. The one thing that's kind of incredible about the Mac is that Windows is perfect for compulsive people because we are the types who will like turn off apps so they're not hogging resources so we can do this other thing, which is completely bypasses the way the system works. But we do this because we've had bad experiences in the past and we never forget or forgive. And it's like, well, you know,
I'm still
remember
defragmenting my drive
back in Windows
every
XP,
night.
They screwed around with bah, 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 and they're like, you're like, dude, that was like 25 years ago. Get over it.
Where's the auto exec dot bat? I'd like to configure
exactly.
That. Yeah.
Yep. So this is the world. And when you move to a Mac, you know, the MacBook Air anyway, you don't even know what to do with yourself. It's like, I mean, it just works. I don't get it. Like what?
You're not supposed to pay attention to any of that stuff. Yeah.
No. And you're not supposed to on Windows either. And depending on the computer, I mean, it can be semi-successful at that. But the fan, you know, blah, whatever. I mean, I've had to render video repeatedly on Windows PCs sometimes just because for some reason it glitched in the middle of it. You know, like weird things happen, you know, there are gremlins in the system is all I'm saying. So I hope they, you know, the one of the sides of the whole conversion to ARM is they are leaving behind some of the legacy dead one. I think it's going to help, you know, rather than being like, oh, well, I'm not going to be able to run WordPad. It's like, that's cute. But the thing runs for like 20 hours. Like, could you just maybe be happy about that? I don't know. So we'll see. I'm excited.
I would consider buying one. I am curious how Linux will run on them.
You're ruining a kind of an article I'm halfway done with, which is that
my job.
And I meant to get this out before they announced this stuff, and I just am so busy. But it occurred to me because of the way my brain works, like you know, Windows is going to benefit from this chipset switch, right? Absolutely. But so is Chrome OS and Linux, right? I mean, and these things are already lighter weight, especially Chrome OS, and in Chrome OS's case, more modern in the sense that there's not a lot of legacy baggage there. And what if this thing we've all been waiting for to make Windows better also makes these other platforms?
Yeah.
Yep. And now we have something that runs for 15 or 20 hours, whatever it is, and is super simple and normal people can use it. You don't have to worry about blah, 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 whatever. I mean,
and
I'm just saying.
Arguably longer because it is a more efficient OS in the first.
That's what I mean. Once that gets into your brain, it's hard to get it out because we've been so excited for the Windows part of it. But the truth is,
this is a good chipset. It's good for everybody.
It's going to float all boats. Yeah. Obviously, maybe it's not obvious to people, but there have been ARM-based Chrome OS versions in the past and probably now still. But, you know, that it's kind of coalesced around the whole x86 thing.
That's not so. No, there are a lot of ARM-based Chrome
OS. Okay,
lots of
them. Then I would say there's some advantage to that because they can run Android apps.
Right.
And
right.
Android apps would run kind of semi-natively or whatever it is.
Yes.
Right. I mean, would they run better? That's my thinking on that. So anyway, I don't want to put too much of a wedge in the spoke there, but it did occur to me, you know, so you're kind of half joking, I know, but also half serious. Like you want to try Linux on these things. I think Linux and Chrome OS will benefit from this. And the question is, what if they benefit more? I mean, we'll see.
Yeah. So, one of the vendors runs with this in a big way, make a really beautiful machine.
I hope that they make drivers available so that, I mean, there are plenty of ARM distros. That's not the problem. It's
yep. Yeah. So that's a tricky area because that would have to come probably from PC makers. Like one of the areas where like they don't like this, but one of the areas where PC makers benefit on the Windows side with ARM is that Microsoft supplies all that in the form of class drivers.
Right.
And this was a big sticking point back in the Windows RT days where they did not want this. This was not the way the world worked, you know, and they were like, they didn't want Microsoft taking over more of the stack. But the truth is that's how you want that to happen. You don't, as a like an Android device maker, say no, we'll handle our own networking drivers. We got this. It's like, dude, what are you doing? Like, this is a standard part. Like, you know, we'll see how that. A lot of people are asking questions about whether they'll be able to buy these chips, buy the motherboards, but you know, build their own PCs. You know, yada yada. Mm-hmm. We don't know the answers to those things. No. But I will say
there is discussions going on with Qualcomm and all of those vendors. Question that Asus could build a motherboard around this, and you can buy it if you want it.
The question is whether they allow it, and why wouldn't they? What you want to sell more of these things? Yeah, we'll go for that.
I have two workstations in my office. One of them could be a Snapdragon set. What the heck, right?
I think this is going to be. This could wipe out Intel if it's done right. Right?
Yeah.
Even things like NASs or little devices that kind of run low end, whatever they're called now, Celeron type chips, and you know, you buy like a NAS, it's like, can it do hardware encoding a video? And it's like, of course it can. It's running on a Snapdragon, and it won't even make a peep.
And when
it's going to be a big difference. Set top boxes,
this thing,
all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, this thing in a small solid state machine, be a heck of a home assistant engine. Like that'd be astonishing. It would do all the voice work itself. Like it could do it all.
Yep.
Image recognizer off your video cameras, like the whole nine yards.
Right. So we'll see. I mean, when Microsoft announced, I don't know, Palladium, which became TPM and Longhorn, and it was all, I go, this is their secret plan to get rid of Linux, which by the way it was, but there was a lot of fear and anger about this kind of stuff. And that might come up again now because we're going to see what happens. Like, will it be possible to buy a ThinkPad, whatever it's called, T40S or whatever, running on a Qualcomm chipset and then be like, yeah, I want to run, you know, Arch Linux or whatever it is.
Yep.
I don't know.
There's question. It's purely, do you want to spend time getting the drivers in order?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it behooves these companies to do that. And some of them, some of them do a good job of that the x86 side.
Lenovo says they're going to do a ThinkPad, right? And they are very Linux, pro Linux. So, or BSD.
They are, but it's the issue here. See, I mentioned the Sinofsky book last week. And one of the issues he raises in there, and I sort of alluded to it earlier, was that the system doesn't work the same. In that case, you're forcing these PC makers to accept this thing that was sort of a reference design and be like, you have to sell this. You can put your own box around it, but this is it. You don't get to screw around with, you know, where chips are laid out and what's in there and blah, blah, blah. Like, this is the thing. And they did not like that. and they may not like that now. Although we're seeing and have heard of a lot of support, like Qualcomm listed out. It's all the major PC makers are supporting this. So that tells me maybe this has evolved, but we don't know that. Well,
also watching Apple eat their lunch with a fully integrated SoC and saying, where's my fully integrated SoC? And now here it is. This is a fully integrated SoC.
Yeah. Well,
put your peripherals around it, but the CPU, GPU, and MPU are dictated.
Or what?
They're set. They're on the die.
Dictated, I think is what he said.
I thought he said dick pics, and I was confused.
Dick pics. So, like, I'm sorry. What's this platform? He's got like a pencil out. Yeah, sorry. Can you spell it? Anyway, a lot of speculation still. This is the way the world works. I mean, the more information we get, you know, like the first question we got in a comment about this particular news item was, how much is it going to cost? It's like, do you think we might have mentioned that if we knew? I mean, like, you know,
it'll cost somewhere between $1,500 and $5,000. Somewhere in that range.
Possibly.
I mean, and if you're buying a Lenovo, it is that range because those things go on sale every time. You can come back every day. It's different.
Oh, yeah. Never pay retail for a Lenovo.
Never, ever, ever. Do not buy. Never buy a Lenovo device not on sale.
Yeah.
So I say this a lot, but we'll see. But we all seem to have landed in the same place on why they have multiple SKUs. That was my first takeaway. I was like, that's interesting. And that's fine, right? I mean, whatever. Who cares?
There are worse problems in this world.
Yeah.
And certainly it does allow for an inexpensive board, a mini ATX board, some kind of NUC, like all of those possibilities.
Oh, my God. Yes, please. Oh, a NUC. Yes.
A NUC with one of these.
Something
in
you
it?
Just like kind of snap on the back of your monitor.
Here's a question. Are these packages, SoC packages, or are they more like the Intel style? You got a memory controller and a chip there.
Right. No, it's a package.
It's a big package, right?
Yep.
On the die.
Yeah.
Okay. Is like RAM on the die? No.
Yes. Some.
Ah, some? Like it. That's what Apple's doing is unified RAM.
Yeah.
Some, but it does have the DDR5.
Yeah, yeah.
On the box.
Apple's putting DDR5 on the die.
Yeah, it's on the die, though. I think it is on the die. I think it's all the same. I think it's exactly the same. The question is whether the storage is on the die, because with Apple, it's technically not, but...
Yeah,
but I don't know that one. I don't know.
It doesn't really matter because it's all soldered in. But it is really about the speed of the interconnect. Obviously, that's what really matters.
The shorter the leads, the better off you are. It'll work for the Cray XMP back in the day. It'll work for these.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I'm really interested in getting one of these.
I'm bullish.
But I'm going to wait till you guys tell me if they.
Yeah.
Live up to
I can't
their
wait
promise.
To see one.
You'll be the first, right, Paul? I mean, you'll get one right away.
I feel, I'm a canary in this coal mine, but I keep qualifying this because, look, I've done this a lot and the MacBook Air has been a revelation of sorts, so it's been nice. But, you know, for the most part, computers like people, they just disappoint you over time. So, we'll see what happens, but I'm waiting for, my nature is just like waiting for that first pause, that first stutter, that first, you click an app, you're like, I clicked that, didn't I? How come it didn't start? And you click it again, and then you're like, oh, it's moving really, we'll see.
A crushing moment. It's another mortal machine.
Yep. Well, no, the Intel Core Ultra 9 based PC, I got a gorgeous, beautiful machine, unbelievable screen. And boy, it's like being... Like outside.
Try opening Notepad, everything stops.
Yeah,
it's crazy. It's weird. Like, it's weird.
I think it's just dead in the water.
I think so, too.
This is it.
I always, they clearly have the intelligence, the intellectual property, the prowess, the capability, whatever you want to say, to do this thing. But we may look back on the history of Intel as Microsoft shifted gears and adopted the cloud and became bigger than ever. And Intel was like megahertz wars, and they went from being like an ARM licensee to being, we don't need that. It's like,
that's never amounted to anything.
They did it after it had amounted to something Paul Otellini, I think it was, the guy who brought Intel to Apple and then would not bring Intel to the iPhone, right? Are you kidding me?
He wanted to, but
he wouldn't do what Steve Jobs wanted. He wouldn't do it.
Well, I don't.
And
think
what they came out with, you can see the how, what Apple lost out on, because Intel, the thing they created was the Atom.
See,
like seriously,
too bad, huh?
I know,
could have been good.
The Atom. Could have been an Atom. God damn. That couldn't be. Aside from the fact that they're both chips, those things could not be further apart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Crazy.
That's, I think, another binning thing where they just had a lot of kind of crappy diet, you know, wafers. And they said, hey, what can we do with these? Oh, I know. Offer a low end.
Laser, no, I know.
Laser a few bits off carve it up and put it in a cheap box.
I only kind of understand the Intel product lineup because I just deal with it so much. But the truth is, if you look at this, you're like, why do you have so many of these things? Like, what is this?
That's binning.
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
I think that's binning.
And why does the battery life keep going down? Like, what is, it's like, really? I don't know.
Yeah. The CPUs may not run, but they do heat the box.
Well, you can kind of make a vague recommendation from the outside. Like I would, like, I'd say, you know, you guys need to adopt an ARM-like architecture, right? And they kind of slowly get into that. They do like these hybrid chipsets, and then they have the Core Ultra finally. But the thing is, I review like the same laptops every year sometimes. And you can see, I can go back and look at my notes. Battery life's going down every year. It's like, so you're making this transition, I guess. You've finally done it 20 years late, but you did it or doing it. And it's like, what's the point of this? Like at the end of the day.
It's a gigahertz thing. You're wasting more.
Yeah, you guys, where you don't care about heat and sound, like a desktop thing, a workstation, whatever. You're doing great. You know, those 17 people love you.
We should really do what happened. You know, I mean, like, how can a company so fumble?
What do you call it? Like, it's a defining moment where you made the wrong decision, right? Like, you can look at certain products and say, oh,
more than one occasion. But I would also argue that every single time they tried to branch away from x86, they got their butt handed to them.
Yeah, they wanted to.
The customers crucified them.
They really
wanted to. No, because they always. But they never bet on anything. Like, in other words, they didn't say, you know what, we're doing it. We're going all in. Yeah. They were always we already have 113 different types of chips. We'll make another one. It's like, guys, come on. Like, you got to focus here.
And then, Microsoft, they didn't sell, they drop it.
Yeah. Microsoft begged them for decades to go thinner, lighter, more efficient. You know, before ARM was the thing on phones, it was always the thing on phones, but before phones became the thing, They were asking for this. They would make these references. Could you do one of these things? Like, could you just do this? And then, you know, the iPhone happened, Android happened, the iPad happened. They're like, when are you going to do this? And they always said no.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, but they dug their own grave.
Yeah. No, we're not going to. It's not like they didn't have plenty of opportunities.
Oh, yep. So sad.
It's unbelievably sad because they should have.
They should be making this chip.
But, you know, it's funny.
In some ways, you call it innovator's dilemma, right?
It's what it is, I guess. But it's funny because they're towing AMD behind them in a little trailer as they go down the cliff. It's like.
Well, but there have been a few moments in time where AMD got ahead of them, like the trail went down the hill
or
something.
But they're still x86, but there's, you know.
They are still, but they, I mean, AMD defined what x86 is today, what we might call x64, right? They defined that.
That's
Intel was forced to. Microsoft to swallow that.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even, I don't know. There was in the beginning when AMD was just like cheaper, there was still a place for them in the market. But there is a really good case to be made today that AMD is innovating more on PC chips than Intel is.
It's not going to make much difference if suddenly Qualcomm comes along with something.
Yeah. Well, not cracking all the time.
I will say, don't overlook people's propensity to accept crap. You know, like the best-selling car of the 1990s was probably like a Ford, whatever that little Pinto piece of crap was.
Yeah.
Pinto. Yeah, well, whatever. Yeah, like an, I can't remember.
AMC Gremlin. Yeah.
Yeah, some stupid little piece of junk. You know, it's like, well, when people can choose a computer, they choose a Mac. No, they don't. Actually, they choose Windows PC.
They choose the cheapest PC they can find.
They choose, exactly. So it's like, people who know what they're doing might choose a Mac, maybe, or have the money, or whatever you want to phrase that, but. People still choose Windows computers. I think that kind of hurts too, because it limits the necessity for innovation, right? It's like, we're doing great. We don't have to do anything.
Right.
It's like, yeah, but it could be better.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Too much work.
It's too much
work. One more story, then we'll wrap this segment because we've got
the whole show up. Yeah.
Yeah. So much more to talk about. But I think this is the most interesting thing going on, right? Well, this and AI, and I know we're going to do that too. So.
Yeah. Just to add to the list of browser companies that are bringing their product to Windows and ARM, Bill Baldy announced this past week they're doing it too. And if you are into their pre-release,
both guys are really excited.
So the funny thing is, unrelated to this, I've been using Vivaldi lately, and there's a hump to get over with it, because it's so configurable that it's almost
crazy.
Like, it's
the first thing that you do when you open it, it pops up a thing. So, well, do you want email? Do you want an RSS reader?
Yeah. It basically says, do you want 1,000 features or do you want 10,000 features? And I'm like, it's hard.
Sure, you can get it just the way you want it, and that's great.
Yeah, you can. And of course, it's synced. So once you do that, you bring it up on another computer, and it's the thing you want. Some of the customization stuff on there, I think, is really neat. It's a great browser. It really is. And it does the privacy stuff like Brave and Firefox and all that. And so that's good. And it's Chromium, so you get all the extensions and blah, 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 whatever. So it's a good product. There aren't that many people using it, unfortunately, but anyway, the only semi-major browser maker, I think, that has not said anything explicitly, unless I missed it, was Opera, and then Arc, I guess, too. But we have, Chrome now is out there. Firefox is out there. DuckDuckGo has not said anything, but I the whole world's going to do this now, right? So it's happening.
The momentum is there.
Yeah.
And ARM comes true.
The big mo. All right. Yep. Time to take a little time out. Get yourself a cup of coffee. Gather your energy, because there's much more to come. As we continue with Windows Weekly, Paul Thurrott, Richard Campbell. Our show today brought to you by Collide. We've talked about so much about Collide. I'm sure you know the name. But now there's some really good news. Collide was just acquired by 1Password. So it's now Collide by 1Password. And that's good. There's a synergy there. Both companies are leading the industry in creating security solutions that put users first. So they're really, this is just a great partnership. For over a year, we've been talking about Collide Device Trust. It helps companies with Okta ensure, Okta makes sure that that person is that person. They authenticate the person. Collide authenticates the devices, make sure they are secure and known before they're let in. And, joining 1Password just makes perfect sense. That's what they're going to keep doing. So if you use Okta and you've been meaning to check out Collide, don't hesitate. This is a great time, better than ever. Collide, by the way, is easy to get started with, because it comes with a library of pre-built device posture checks. So you can just turn it on and immediately you get, that baseline protection. It's quite good. And if you've got some unusual devices or you want to extend it, you can easily write your own custom checks for just about anything you can think of. The other thing I love about Collide is you can use it on devices without MDM. So your entire Linux fleet, your contractor devices, every BYOD phone and laptop in your company, they can all be protected with Collide. And now that Collide's part of 1Password, it's just going to get better. I want you to find out more. Check it out at collide.com/dubdub. Learn more. Watch the demo today. That's Collide, collide.com/WW. Collide for companies that use Okta. I'm part of 1Password. Okay, let's see here. What do you want to do? What do you want to do next, guys?
So, to me, this would have been, I guess because it's Windows, would have been the top story normally. But yesterday, Tuesday, was week D. We need a term for this. We have Patch Tuesday, right, for the second Tuesday of every month.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, what do we call this? Fast and Fluid Tuesday. Mistake Tuesday, I don't know, Preview Tuesday, this is going to be a term for this, but the Tuesday of week D, the fourth Tuesday of the month, is when Microsoft now puts out their preview updates for Windows 10 and Windows 11. And this is an early look at the Patch Tuesday release for next month. So last month we got Moment 5, this time we're getting something much less than a moment, I guess.
It's less than a moment.
It's less than a moment because it's a month. It's not a
this
quarter.
Magic moment.
And this is stuff we've been talking about. The faux outrage over recommended apps in the start menu. There's also, I don't know that this was promoted. Maybe I just wasn't paying attention, but they're also going to, actually, the way they phrased it was you might see, they literally said that word. I love it. Frequently used apps in start as well. These would both appear in that bottom recommended section right at this, the bottom half of the Star menu. Yeah, you can turn these things off. I said this last week, but the controls to disable this are already in Windows now. So you can turn it all off if you want. Maybe that should have been my tip. Maybe I'll do a little video on this. The way to define this, though, is if you open up Windows Settings and search for Suggestions, the top link goes to System Notifications, go all the way to the bottom, past all your apps, and it says Additional Settings, and you want to turn all those off. There's three of them. It says Show the Windows Welcome Experience after updates and when signed in, show what's new and suggested. That's not what it does. That's a full screen ad to get you to sign up for a folder backup in OneDrive if you don't have that enabled, and then some other features. It's basically about getting you to enable things you don't want to enable. The second one is suggest ways to get the most out of Windows and finish setting up this device. And the third is get tips and suggestions when using Windows. So just turn them all off, and then you'll never see these things that everyone was so outraged over. You know, so when they come, I guess
they buried them pretty deep. You got to dig down to get
Oh, yeah. The only thing buried deeper than this is how to change your default search engine in Microsoft Edge. It's like a, it's like one of those hedge mazes. Like, you know, it's in there somewhere. Like, you know, it's in there and it's hard to find, but it is in there. And they put it in the, it's like the most illogical. Anyway, so that's that stuff. And then some.
Question is, how do you turn off the nag? You should switch it back to Edge.
Oh, you can't turn that off. That's my complaint. Yeah. This is one thing I think, like, because I run into people who defend Edge, who like Edge. And I listen from a functionality perspective, even from a look and feel perspective, because it kind of feels natural in Windows 11. Mm-hmm. I get it. I get it. But the thing you need to understand is that, like, for you not to be harassed by Edge, you need to change nothing. Like, you have to accept every default.
Yes. You will take everything from us.
You will be harassed. So even if you choose Edge, it's going to go after you. Mm-hmm. And that's...
using Edge right.
That's right. For Microsoft. .. Yeah. Yep. And then two of the other things that are in this weekday D update are related to widgets, but not the same widgets. I don't know why they use this terminology. I know. There's widgets on the desktop where you have the icon in the corner. Mm-hmm. Apparently those icons are... can be of low quality, low resolution, fuzzy, whatever. Mm-hmm. So they improve the resolution of those. And then they've added more. And the reason you would see different icons down there is if you have like all the notifications and stuff on. So the weather icon can change if it's cloudy or sunny or rainy or whatever. And then they have different icons for like news alerts, like things are happening out in the world. So I turned all that stuff off other than the weather. So I don't really care about that. And then there are these things that I thought were called cards, but they're adding... what they are now calling widgets to the lock screen. And these are the things that started with weather, where you get that one card. I still think of it as a card in the bottom middle of the lock screen. And then more are coming. I think news and sports and I don't remember what, or stocks, maybe. I don't know. There have been some changes there as well. I still don't see anything other than that one stock weather widget anywhere. And even then I don't always see it. So standard Windows experience these days. And that's about it. So whether you're on 22H2 or 23H2, you'll get the same update if you want it now. And then if you don't want it, you can get it, patch to Zan May because you're getting it anyway. So
it's only a question of when, not if.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're going to bend over eventually. That's all I'm saying. So, I mean, you can be cute about it, but it's happening.
Here we go.
Yep. And then since last week, there have been two releases to the Insider program. One is the promised threatened separation again of Canary and Dev. So they've gone their own ways. Dev stays on 24H2. Canary is kind of post 24H2, if you will. Mm-hmm. So a new build path. This means, among other things, that if you hadn't already made the switch, you can no longer switch between the two. So if you're in Canary, you're in Canary. Now you get to reset the machine.
No way out.
Right. Well, there is a way out, but it's
anyone's paving your machine.
I do this so often. The summer after high school, I did construction work. And I think that summer I replaced a tire on the truck almost every day all summer. So I replaced probably 110 tires over the course of the summer. I got really good at it. And that's how I feel. Yeah. That's how I feel about reset this PC. Like I do this all the time. Like this is just. Yeah. Most people would be like, I don't know. I'm like, oh yeah, let's go for it. This is fine. Jump off the cliff. It's going to work great. And it, by the way, it's always great. It's fine. And then just minor changes and nothing to speak of there. No new build for dev channel. That's nothing has happened there. And then on the beta channel, which is a little, I guess, shorter term, this is the stuff we're probably going to see that patch Tuesday in May, patch Tuesday in June, whatever it is.
Right.
They're starting to roll out some changes to the widgets.
Widgets.
Yeah. So this one.
Now with extra widgets.
Before the show, I spent a little time explaining to Richard how I waste my time on work-related things. And this was because of the language of this post. Laurent, the guy who writes our news, we spent about an hour going back and forth on this one.
On the right way and to do it.
Because Microsoft doesn't know how to use language consistently. Right. So I had to basically decode this. And here's what's happening. Today, the widgets board has two sides, and they've had different names, so let's not worry about that too much, but there are widgets, and then there's a feed. And the only feed today is what used to be called the discovery feed, but it's Microsoft Start feed, whatever the name is. It's a feed. It's a news feed. It has all those crappy
poor news quality stories, data sources, yep, yeah,
that everyone, you know, bitched and moaned about, as they should, because it's terrible. Hmm. So responding 2 years later to the complaints, they made this thing extensible. And they allowed, among other things, users to turn off that feed, but also to install third-party feeds, of which there are zero to this day. Right. I don't check every single day, but I checked certainly when this thing came out yesterday, and there are no third-party feeds. But based on the language they use, it's a little hard to decode. But they're adding a navigation pane to the side. What they're going to allow you to do, I know to be true, is without turning off the feed, you can toggle the feed. So you can have a view that's just widgets or widgets with a feed, I guess. Right now it's the feed, right?
There could be more, but there isn't any.
Right. They may be, and this one's a little unclear, but it seems like they may be offering the ability as you install third-party feeds to also toggle between those feeds. So if you have I don't remember the name of it. The Athletic was purchased by the New York Times. I think if you love the Athletic and you're a subscriber and they make a feed for widgets, you could install it in widgets and you could toggle between no feed, the Microsoft feed and the Athletic feed. I'm just making that up. No one said they're doing that, but I think that's what they're doing.
That would be good.
Testing that in beta.
I have to see who else are widget sources.
I haven't even seen him pull.
There are no widgets. There are no feed sources. Oh. So right now it's just a theory.
Oh, it's so a theory. Well,
if you build it, you are dumb. Maybe they'll come. We'll see. So far, no one has come. There's an account manager in Start. So I just experienced, I think for the first time, that thing where you open the Start menu and there's like a little orange circle on your user profile picture. And then you click on it and says, I know we haven't asked you this before, Paul, but we're thinking, just let me throw it out there. Maybe you want to enable OneDrive folder backup. What do you think? You just want to just do it? Yeah. And then my options are do it now or just ask me later. So
that's all you get.
That's in stable. That's not what this is. This is when you click the power button and you will get, maybe it is the user. Actually, it makes more sense. It would be the user profile button. They will ask you to do certain things related to your Microsoft account, typically, including such things as you don't have enough recovery factors set up. Maybe you should do that. And, which, by the way, not a horrible thing to do, honestly. Yeah. When I went on my little security jihad end of last year, I that's one of the things I documented. It's like you need to have as many good recovery methods as you can. And by good, I mean ones that you control. In other words, not an email address for work that may fire you or a school that may get rid of you, or, you know, they need to be things that you control and multiple things, right? So I'm going to hold off on whether or not that's a good one or not. That's hard to say. And in a sad reflection of how the world works, in fact, I may do an episode of Hands on Windows just about like share. If that makes sense, because the myriad of ways in which you can share things, like you're working on a computer and you want to get the thing you're working on this computer, how do you do it? And if it's a, I use Nearby Share, which is a fantastic feature that me and three other people on the entire planet know about. But there's also an extensible share interface where an app can register as a destination for an operation.
For sharing,
so if you drag you right click on a document, you say, I want to share this. And then it will say, well, okay, what things can share this thing, right? No apps have ever adopted this. That's why they're manually adding some like WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger and so forth. But they're basically succumbed to reality. So what they're adding is email it to yourself. Just email it. Because that's what everyone does, right?
But we'll make it a right click now to make it easy.
They are literally adding a Gmail icon to share so that if you have a Gmail account, you can click on it and you can email the file to yourself. And that's how freaking dumb my world is. Like, it seriously.
It's so sad.
It makes me so sad. But you know what? The truth is, people aren't that sophisticated. Yeah. I mean, it
works.
So
they discovered it.
Anyway, I'm sure AirPlay or whatever it's called, AirDrop, whatever.
Oh, you'd
I'm
be sure amazed how few iPhone users know that all you have to do is touch the top of your iPhone to the top of theirs, and it'll just squirt.
Listen, okay, do we even know this? Let me tell. I might have told the story. This is, if you want a mind-blown moment with the Apple stuff, you can copy something to the clipboard of the iPhone and paste it on a
continuity.
Mac, right?
Yeah.
Yikes. Okay. Yeah. Okay, here's one. This is the one that killed me. I was in the, speaking of the Qualcomm stuff, I was in that meeting and I took a photo on my iPhone of one of the slides. And I'm like, that'd be neat to put this in my notes, which are Notion on my PC. My PC is connected to the Wi-Fi network. My phone is not. It's connected to the cellular network. And I was like, I wonder if I could copy and paste somehow. And I did, and it worked. And God damn it, magic, what is happening? Woo. Like, that's crazy. Or you could be a Windows user and email it to yourself through Gmail, because that's where we're at. So it's, you know, it's basically rocket ships and sticks and fire. I
throw just, a rock.
It's good to have a fallback for the cavemen in the audience.
If you're wondering why I'm
throwing rock.
Rock,
it's
good.
It's because.
Here come rock.
Yep. It's not even their email thing, too.
Rock, like, you know, screw email.
Like, people are using Gmail. We're going to put there. It's like, seriously. Anyway, okay. It's fine. And then there's an advertisement coming to settings. You'll be shocked. Game Pass. If you don't have a Game Pass, they're going to, I thought they already did this. Honestly, Microsoft advertises, Microsoft 365. And then if you say no to that, they'll advertise Microsoft 365 Basic. And then they will advertise Game Pass in setup for Windows. They also I think they do this today. Let me just go look. If you go into, setting, well, see, I subscribe to all this stuff. So if you don't subscribe, they will advertise, Microsoft 365 Game Pass, and actually I think Copilot Pro as well. So, so I'm not sure what's new there, but, in case you were thinking,
is getting high. I mean,
they're running out of screen space, you know?
First they nagged me about Edge and I ignored it. Then they nagged me about OneDrive and I ignored that too.
So I think the title of that post is, they nagged me to install OneDrive folder backup, and I said nothing. Except that's not my blog post. I said a lot. The Verge or someone just wrote a story like, why does Windows 11 nag me so much? I'm like, have you been awake? Like, what? This didn't just happen. This is, okay. there was a story about Microsoft dramatically improved the performance of the Microsoft Store underneath the covers, so to speak, right? They didn't change the type of app it was, but they improved the performance. This past week, they announced via a tweet from a single employee, which I found a little off-putting, that people don't know this. You can go to Google, right, or some search engine. Actually, go to Google, because this doesn't work in Bing, and type in the name of an app and then say site:apps.microsoft.com. And if you search for that, you'll find the store listing for that app, and then you can click on it. And the experience today, or up until recently, was it would load, well, back in the day, it would load the entire Microsoft Store app after you approved it. Mm-hmm. And then it would go to the page for that app on the store, which, you know, whatever, that's fine, right? Yeah. And apparently that was too slow and too bulky or whatever for people. So Microsoft came up with a streamlined version of the Microsoft Store. It's still the store app, but it runs in a small window. It looks like an installer, and you click install if you want to, and it's the store. So it runs and it installs the app, and it just works normally. But apparently that was too much for some people, so they decided, let's just make it look like a web download. So what they do is they download, but it basically... it kind of looks like a normal, like I'm downloading from the web experience, because it does download an EXE, but then that EXE runs and in the background, it downloads the app from the store. So it's a more seamless experience, right? Couple of caveats to this. I've never experienced it, because you have to actually opt into it as a developer. So I've never actually seen it. I never honestly had a problem with the way the system worked before, but I guess this, eventually what's going to happen is we're going to come full circle.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of downloading apps from the web, we're going to download an app from the web. It's just going to download from the store from the web. And I just, what's the point of the store? I don't even know what we're doing anymore. What is this weird middleman between me and my app? I don't know. So I guess that's an improvement. I don't know. It's not a big deal for me. So I think the way it works now is okay. And then this is only kind of semi-related, but remember when Mark Zuckerberg, a month or so ago, whatever it was, he like reviewed the Apple Vision Pro.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
And shocker, he didn't like it.
Yeah, it was weird.
And he got a lot of bad feedback for this, but a negative feedback. But one of the things he said was he kind of made the case that Apple was this closed proprietary system and that their thing was open, which it is not. And that this followed the battle that's always been in place between like open Windows, Android, closed Apple, Mac, iPhone, and that this was yet another example of that. Leaving aside the fact that most of Apple's competitors have in fact been closed too, the Quest, whatever it's called, the Meta, whatever, what's that thing called? Meta, whatever it's is
Quest, Horizon. Meta Quest, Horizon, yeah.
Or Horizon World, yeah.
Yeah, oh, you mean their software? Systems. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but now they're not. So they announced, Meta did this week, that they are opening up this platform and they're going to allow third parties to sell headsets of their own. And a couple of PC makers, because they can't ever make good decisions, decided they're going to, like Lenovo was one of them, they're going to sell these things. Okay. And so there's a loose tie-in here. Microsoft is not going. The initial report suggested Microsoft was going to be one of these companies. And it's like, come on, really? And the answer is no. But they are going to allow, they're going to do some kind of an Xbox licensing something with some third party where there will be an Xbox Edition Horizon OS device that I assume will look like, what, a black rectangle on your head or something? I don't know what the point of that is.
Yeah,
weird. But I'm not a big fan of Meta, Mark Zuckerberg, or VR, but it sounds okay to me.
VR is the next big thing, don't you know?
That's what I've been told for 25 years. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I will say they just dropped the price of their Quest 2 to under $200 permanently.
Because they have the Quest 3 now as well.
Right.
Yeah, but at that price, I mean, like, if you want to like see what all the fuss
more,
is about,
even more people will learn how useless VR is. It's great.
Yeah, I think it's important that more people have unused electronics in their closet, like
devices
I do.
Devices gathering dust. It's a great thing. You saw
something the Vision, curl up on.
I try not to take a victory lap. The Vision Pro sales have been very disappointing.
Yeah. And they didn't make that many in the first place. But.
Yeah, they thought that. Right. Well, they. Yeah. I saw. Right. There was
what could they have thought?
There was sad post on Reddit by a guy who bought 20 Vision Pros, expecting to be able to sell them for a significant premium.
Right.
Oh boy.
And
I'm sorry. Are we going to feel bad for?
Didn't work out so good. In fact, apparently, you can go to eBay and buy them for less than retail now.
Right.
So
it's like exercise equipment, you know.
Yeah.
Most of the people who buy this thing like use it for a little while, stop using it, and then after a while, they're like, "Why do I have this expensive thing in my house?"
Yeah.
I don't wish it ill or anything.
No. It just was apparent to me. We've already tried this and it's failed. And the problem is Apple had gone so far down the road and spent so much money, they couldn't release.
It's never going to make sense at $3,500.
Right.
A thing that is as heavy as your own head. Yeah,
nobody wants
you like a baby. You can't like
support
your own.
Nobody wants it at $200. That's why Meta has reduced the price of the Quest 2. Nobody wants it, period. It's a very limited market.
If it was compelling enough, but it's not.
It's not. Nobody wants to put a computer on their face.
I think we're all at the point where we're actually looking to spend
cool
less time
enough,
on this stuff.
You will.
You know, I'm ready to move on. I don't. You know,
yeah,
the initial
reaction to the Vision Pro is not you. It's can I try it? And then when it is good enough, then you make fun of it.
Well, and apparently the the Apple store employees are saying, yeah, we don't really get people in here to try it much anymore.
Right, right.
I think everybody who was curious either got one or tried it, and that's it, and it's over.
Right. So the market for this thing was some tens of thousands of people.
Well, hundreds of thousands. They probably 100,000, 200,000, maybe as much as 400,000. Apple was ready to make 800,000, and they've now cut way back. Yeah.
Yep.
That's I shouldn't gloat. It's not a thing to gloat about. I feel bad for the people.
No, but it's what you're gloating over is you warn people of this. It's not so much like I was right. It's like I'm trying to get people to think clearly here, and what I'm trying to tell you is like this thing doesn't make sense. And you're like Apple, you know.
Right.
I don't know.
I predicted, and this we'll see, time will tell, but I predicted they will not make a second one and they'll just quietly.
Wow, that is a bold prediction.
Yeah, they'll
that
quietly
would be
let it go. I think there's not a market for it and they know that now.
I don't know if they've had a defeat that.
It would be a big one for them, yeah. And that's the argument.
The Mac Cube thing that they made was kind of falls into this category.
Yeah, I bought that on the last day availability.
That was a pretty machine though, right?
I loved it.
How about the Apple Newton? You know,
yeah, but that was not Scully. So,
no, but that might be a good example, just because it was a different platform. It was them trying to do something different that didn't. Yeah,
I admire them and for trying it and building something really remarkable.
But you know what? I'd admire more if they were like, you know what, this isn't going to work, just like they did with the car. Like, just admit it. Just walk away.
Well, I think that's what's going to happen. It would be imprudent, I think, for them to throw good money after bad at this point.
But the question has always been, will there be a V2?
Right. Yeah. What's this called?
You're punishing the existing customers. Like, hey, remember that $3,500 you spent? Got another one?
Yeah. Well, they were warned that this is not. This is you're buying the very early edition.
Yep.
But the dearth of stuff, the dearth of content, the dearth of apps
it's the price.
And the price.
You know, when you Apple makes these iPhones, which are fantastic. They're fantastic. They're beautiful machines. Yeah. And when they market the next one next year, and they're like, you know, they don't say this, but the marketing is basically, you know, that piece of crap you bought last year, this is way better. But we can at least know when they say that, like, come on, this thing I have is great. Whereas I think the people with the first gen Vision Pro are going to be kind of, if they do make another one, it's going to be like, wait, what's happening here?
We'll see.
I don't know. It's
Meta, you know, I feel like Meta did all the market research for them and just Apple just didn't want to listen.
Yeah.
Right. You
know, Apple said, no, but ours is going to be better.
There were those stories at the beginning that the engineers were saying that Tim Cook shouldn't release it, and he wanted it.
Yeah. Let's take a little pause that refreshes before I gloat any farther, and then we'll go to Microsoft 365. And, yes, there's a lot of AI news and Xbox news. And, of course, Richard, even though he's in Sweden, is going to return to Scotland.
I will.
The Glens are calling.
To the Glen.
Are you thirsty, Richard?
Are you thirsty, laddie? Have a wee dram on me.
I got a bag of brandy going home with me.
Oh, nice. You got the, whatchamacallit?
The bladder.
The vin,
The vin? How many bottles?
Four.
Four bottles of Devin. How long will that last you?
Oh, minutes.
Because you're going to give it to friends because you're such a generous guy.
So it lasts about as long as a typical Vision Pro experience.
There was a guy.
I didn't even have to spend $3,500.
Flying home on the plane last week, there was a guy.
Please tell me you didn't see a guy on a plane.
Yeah, right in front of me, in the row in front of me, had a Vision Pro on. I thought, oh, that's interesting.
Oh, I would have hit him right at the thing.
For me, then, a market research. I watched. He wore it for about 10 minutes, took it off, and that was it. Never again on the flight.
10 minutes.
Yeah, he was all excited about. Oh, I'm going to watch movies on the flight. Blah blah. Yeah. And I don't know what happened.
The Sir Techery boys were talking about. It's like you want this for being on the airplane. So yeah. Whatever he listened to or read Sir Techery.
Hey boy, last thing you want to. I understand wanting to kind of zone out from the environment. I get that, but you're also very conspicuous with this thing on. And I would not want that.
Not that care, right?
And people can sneak up on you.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I elbow him in the side of the head. Oh, sorry, I didn't even see you there.
There are great ways to zone out on an airplane, starting with Ambien, right? Like,
Right. Slightly less expensive.
Yeah. That's true. Sleeping is a great thing.
Rested by the end of the trip.
If I could sleep every flight, I don't care if it's the middle of the day. I just want to sleep through it.
No, there's wake a up lot and, of flights.
I almost never can. That's the dream.
Actually, I kind of drifted in and out the whole flight. But I wasn't paying attention. We landed. I wasn't ready for it. And I bit my lip.
Oh, God. Like, what?
We went, boom. We landed kind of hard. And I guess, I don't know what happened, but I bit my lip.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah, it was terrible. It was like, whoa, we're here.
We had a bumpy landing. The woman next to me grabbed my hand so hard that she put indentations of her fingernails into top of my hand. And I was like, what are you doing?
Who are you?
Yeah. No, we had never spoken.
It's pretty funny.
She was scared.
I've had that happen to me. Yeah. Our show today, my friends. It was me. I grabbed your hand.
I knew it.
It's my fingernails. Look, you can see the prints. This episode of Windows Weekly brought to you by our great friends at ACI Learning. We've talked about IT Pro for years, right? That's who it is. IT Pro is now part of ACI Learning. Binge-worthy video on demand for IT and cybersecurity training. They're the best. With IT Pro, you will get cert ready with access to their full video library. This number keeps going up. Now, 7,250 hours of training. And by the way, that's not dusty old library footage from, years ago. How to use Novell Netware. It is actually current because they have, what is it, 5, 6, 7 studios? We went out there to Gainesville to see it, and they're making content all day, Monday through Friday. That 7,250 hours of training is up-to-date current training. The premium training plans also include practice exams, so you can be ready to take the test before you pay for it. I think that's actually one of the best ways to study for exams is to take practice exams. Just to see, do I know this material? You do. I feel good. Virtual labs, which makes it easy for you to set up a Windows server and Windows clients without actually having even a PC. And so much more. IT Pro from ACI Learning makes training fun. That's important. Fun and engaging. All the training videos are produced in an engaging talk show format. They call it edutainment. But these are experts in the field. They're not just, trained monkeys. These people know their business. And this is key. They're passionate about it. And that passion is what makes it engaging. They really love this stuff. And you will love it, too. You're really learning from somebody who knows it and loves it. And I think that's the best kind of training. Take your IT or cyber career to the next level. Be bold. Train smart. With ACI Learning. Visit go.acilearning.com/twit. You got that? go.acilearning.com/twit. Oh, and don't forget to use the code TWIT30 at checkout to save 30% on your first month or first year of IT Pro training. go.acilearning.com/twit. Individuals, don't forget TWIT30 to save 30% on your first month or first year of IT Pro training at ACI Learning. go.acilearning.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support. If you're a Club Twit member, go into the Discord and you will meet many, many people who've gotten their certs, gotten their first jobs, who are getting great training from ACI. There are so many of our audience members have, and they're happy to share their experiences with you. All right, back to the show we go. Paul Theroux.
Oh, this year.
The show. Yes. Oh, it's the show. And Richard Campbell.
Yes. While you were doing the ad, I got a PR outreach, and this is not exactly what I'm looking for, but Google is rolling out a new experience for Microsoft 365 and Chrome OS that will allow you to, I guess, you open a file from the Chromebook and it will save it to OneDrive. So it's not like a full sync thing, but it does integrate with the Files app. I need to go see this. It's hard for me to, based on this description, I'm not 100% sure what's going on here, but it says you install the Microsoft 365 web apps, connect the Files app to OneDrive, and then when you open files in Microsoft 365, they actually, in those apps, it will actually save them to Microsoft 365 instead of locally or to Google Drive. So anyway.
Okay.
Breaking news. Okay.
Done.
Or something. Where's this? And let's see. We did week D, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So we talked sometime recently about a new version of Microsoft Office for perpetual users. Like, they don't want the subscription. This is, you just buy the Office suite, and that there's going to be a long-term service and channel version of it, both of which are going to bear the 2024 name. If you would like to preview the commercial version of this, which is going to happen on Windows and Mac, you can do that now. This is the old school Office suite, right? So Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, and Outlook. But also Skype for Business, because, yep, it's 2007 or whatever again. Visio 2024 and Project 2024. Publisher will not be included, right? That's being retired. 5 years of support. We talked about how they were having that support time frame. And I haven't taken a look at this, but this is basically just, if you want to, you know, preview this before it comes out later this year, you can. And it is standalone. It doesn't connect to any of the online stuff. You can't use Copilot with it and so forth. And, you know, who knows? Maybe you see that as a benefit. I know some people do. Speaking of Classic, Microsoft also announced, I think today, that they are retiring the Classic, the original version of the Teams desktop app, on July 1.
Well, that's fast.
Yeah, that one is fast. And my guess here is that, honestly, I think the uptick on the new Teams has been good. So I think that's what that says.
Just because the old Teams was so rough. It's like, I'll try it.
I don't mean, and don't ping me because I said this, but I don't hear people complaining about the new Teams. Like the original Teams, a lot of complaints. I had a lot of complaints.
It's more Stockholm syndrome. You've been so badly burned now that we gave you a new version. Don't make us do it again.
Yes. no one's more lightweight and all that stuff, but I never had a problem with like the heft of it. To me, it was just lots of bugs and weird behaviors, and I don't know, seems like it works. Yeah, works well for me, but anyway, they're moving pretty aggressively to get rid of that. And of course, there's also a unified Teams client, which is the new client, right, that will connect to both consumer and commercial accounts soon, and this will be included in Windows 11 24H2 in the second half of the year, probably not in the initial release, because they're still testing it. And speaking of things I only half understand, because this is kind of curious too. Dropbox announced a bunch of things today. The only one I really care about is some new integrations with Microsoft 365, and in particular, OneDrive. And they are allowing, for the first time, their customers to co-author inside of Microsoft 365 apps, specifically Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, using the desktop, web, or mobile client, meaning the Dropbox client, which is very interesting, because I don't know what that looks like. So to me, when I hear that, what I'm thinking is you're doing file system integration and you're using Dropbox and you're just using Word and it does, you know, collaboration, right? But it looks like, based on, well, this is a shot of the web app actually. So at least from the web app, you'll be able to, from within Dropbox, whatever the experience is, you basically load these apps in place. And there's a couple of light customizations where you can open in or save to Dropbox instead of, you know, OneDrive or OneDrive for Business. My understanding is that whatever the sync technology is that Microsoft uses for OneDrive is available to third-party developers. And which is what allows us to do things like files on demand. But let's just leave it at that, files on demand, basically, where you can kind of just say, look, I want this folder or these files to be available when I'm offline, arbitrarily. Or you double click on an offline folder, but you're online, so it loads. And now it's available offline unless you specify otherwise. And I believe, I could be wrong about this, but I think that the Dropbox desktop client does that now. And I think it actually uses the one that Microsoft built for OneDrive, I think.
Hmm. Okay.
So yeah, like it's kind of not an open standard, but like, you know, it's certainly a proven solution. So if that's the case,
why did they adopt Dropbox for some of this stuff? Like, was that really the market leader? Is that why they did it?
Because Dropbox is just storage, it's kind of a weird one to me. It's obviously the biggest name in specifically cloud storage, you know, standalone cloud storage. But when you go to Google with Google Drive or Microsoft with OneDrive, you know, you're typically signing up for that, you know, the subscription has the apps and all that stuff. And I kind of wonder how Dropbox exists in that world. I, you know,
yeah. I wonder never, if Dropbox offered, Dropbox threatened to have their own office suite. Like,
so, Google Drive. I don't remember the details of this, but they have made
they were
some acquisitions along those lines. I think one of them might be called Paper, I think is their word processor.
And they have a DocuSign solution. And so I'm just wondering, maybe Microsoft said, you know, if you don't do that.
it's a weird thing. Like Dropbox is talking about how you, well, so for example, you can integrate Dropbox storage into Teams. And I'm thinking to myself, why would anyone do this? Like if you're paying for Teams, like, You're just gonna use OneDrive. You get a terabyte for free. Why wouldn't you just use that? It's weird. Like it's in a company, you've got all the
permissions. It's definitely a solution looking for a problem.
Like, I think so. I'm a little confused by it. I'm not saying Dropbox is not high quality or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I don't mean that, but I I'm just confused about what their role might be. Okay, I was confused about what Citrix's role was in the face of Hyper-V and remote desktop or whatever, and they're still kicking.
It's good that Microsoft's not a monopoly, right?
I guess.
I hope that's not the only.
I mean, the other hard way of looking at this is an embrace. The easiest way for you to get your stuff out of Dropbox and into OneDrive.
Yeah, a Dropbox is the data repatriation service, I don't know. I'm sure both of them have reasons for doing this, but obviously on Microsoft side, it makes sense. You want to partner with these companies and be like, see, we have a healthy ecosystem.
We have a healthy ecosystem. We facilitate people migrating away from them very easily.
Yeah. Is that the Imperial March I hear playing in the background, Sasha? Yeah. No, that's the Spotify playlist. Don't worry about that.
These are not the drugs you're looking for.
Yeah. Yep. and then this is just kind of a dev topic, but I thought it was kind of neat because a year or so ago, GitHub announced they were going to start migrating their code contributors on the service to 2FA. Mm-hmm. And they had this goal they had set up for the end of 2023. They started with the high profile users, if that makes sense, the governmental big companies, you know, the stuff that would where risk is really high. And not surprisingly, this was enormously successful. I think part of the reason it was they midstream through this implemented passkeys, and their implementation of passkeys to this day might be one of the best. It's really, really well done. In fact, passkey usage has overtaken other forms of WebAuth based 2FA. It did happen very quickly and it stayed that way for a long time or ever since. SMS usage has dropped off. They're also trying to get people to adopt multiple 2FA methods, whether it's passkeys, security keys, et cetera. But let's see if the numbers are, where is the numbers? 95% opted rate across all code contributors. Yeah, really good. Yeah. They're trying out, like I said, multiple 2FA methods, including more secure methods. 1.4 million of their customers have adopted passkeys. It's just, I don't know. It's going great. I don't know what to say. It's just going great. Yeah. So I think they've done it right.
Good.
Speaking of, by the way, the picture that accompanies my article is a great example of how you get something right, which is a lot of companies offer you this 2FA thing. And as a typical person, developers are technical, obviously, but they might not be security experts. You kind of click through and you're like, okay, you know, whatever. Did you save your recovery thing? Yeah, save. And then what they do is they prompt everyone who enables any form of 2FA. They actually come back and prompt you 28 days later and say, let's make sure it's set up right.
Well, that's,
you know, really smart. Like, I think they've just done things right.
Also, I have to say, excellent passkeys integration. I don't know if you guys use passkeys with your GitHub, but it's the easiest.
Yep. It's the best.
Simplest. Yep. It's beautiful. It's a work of art. I wish everybody would do this.
Yep. Yeah. Even Google, which I lauded early on, now I would say they've completely botched this. Like, I get these weird... They default to a passkey prompt on like a new computer, but then it's like this multi-step forward. You bring up a camera and you take a picture, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, guys, I have a code in an app. Could I just do the code thing and then you can save the passkey to the computer? Like, don't make me do it on the first one. It's just too many steps. GitHub gets it right.
Nice. You could use your password and log in and use the passkey as 2FA.
If you were a commoner.
Sign in. And since I'm using... I have to unlock my my
is that Dashlane or Bitwarden?
Yeah. Bitwarden. So same thing. And that's a beauty thing because I can.
Because it's in there, right?
Yeah, it goes to all my platforms. Nice is, yeah.
This could be like you brought up a new computer, a new browser. All you've done is signed into your password manager. The passkey saved there. You don't type anything to get into that.
Isn't that great?
Oh, it's beautiful. It's the best. I love it. That combination is just classic.
So, and I think maybe that contributes a little bit too to the uptake of 2FA because people want to try passkeys.
You got to get it. All the companies that make password managers, all the companies in the FIDO Alliance, et cetera, they know this stuff is hard. They're like, we got to get this right. You know, we got to get the user experience right. And you see like this wide range of those experiences, depending on the app, the service, whatever. And most of them are kind of garbage, you know, frankly. Yeah. And I think that's why people are like, oh, this will never take off. You know, it's like, well, you know, if you get it right, it will take off.
Yeah.
And I think GitHub, it still to me is the shining example. Of getting
hopefully,
it right.
Hopefully they publish their implementation so this can follow it.
So actually they do have a resource for other. Actually it's in my article. I don't know that they did it that way, but there's a resource for like, if you want to understand how to do this in your organization, we have like a resource for that. Like do what we did, but do it for you like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right. Best practices and whatnot. You know, number one, don't be
afraid.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are in luck. Oh, still logging in. You are listening to
it's a terrific experience.
It's just because I haven't logged in a bit worn yet. You are listening to the best darn show about Microsoft there is in the universe.
Wow.
Well, we haven't checked it out past Alpha Centauri, but...
Yeah, I feel comfortable with it, though. In the nearby universe. In the same way that, like, the NFL is the world champions, we are the champions.
That's right. We're the world champions of Microsoft podcasts.
Yeah.
Paul Theroux, he's on your left. Richard Campbell's on your right. And we are glad you're here. Get ready. Fasten your seatbelts. It's almost AI time. AI time begins.
You never asked for another cup of my AI.
I'd like another cup. Please, Paul.
I can't remember if they announced this officially, but the Bloomberg, very reliable at least, has said that the European Commission has looked at the Microsoft OpenAI partnership and has decided not to formally investigate it.
Interesting.
I can't say I have an opinion on that other than noting that of the big box regulators, you know, the FTC and the DOJ in the United States, and I guess I'll include the UK CMA in this list. I trust these guys the most in the sense that they seem to get it right, you know, so it's fine. I think we discussed this, like you got to look at it. It's kind of weird, you know,
it's big money too.
And it seems like it was specifically designed to, you know, end run around the regulations or the regulators that would have been on them if they tried to acquire OpenAI, right? It may be as simple as OpenAI just literally was like, it doesn't matter how much money you have. We're not doing it. But it just looks weird, right? It's a unique partnership.
But they've done their best to try and broaden that, right? They've signed on with all kinds of other AI.
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah, it's ludicrous. Yeah.
And I think that's part of it. It's like at some point you say... Is this still a unique relationship? Like, do we really want to fight this fight? What's here?
Right, right. I mean, and honestly, this next story in some ways is kind of tied to that.
They don't have control, right? They have a non-voting seat. They have an observer seat, but they don't control the company. Although when Satya got angry, everybody stopped.
We do have that suspicion of a Grimer Wormtongue style relationship there, but...
Well, I think he's got the button, right? He's like, I can turn off Azure. Then what do you got?
Nice. That's true. That's true.
Don't make me cancel your account, you know? Like, look out.
Like, you could probably get wound up on AWS, but how quick is it going to be? That's a good question.
Those exfil fees are going to be serious. How many terabytes do you need to move?
Nice. That's true. Yeah. You thought it was bad moving between Chrome OS and Microsoft 365.
Watch this.
I don't know how I'm going to handle this kind of thing. I've started writing about a lot of the SLM, LLM releases as they occur. But what I've discovered is that one occurs approximately every 36 hours. And I'm not sure if I have the time or inclination to keep doing this.
Right.
And in this vein, Microsoft, and I think tied to the previous story too, were in a sense that they kind of want to show that they can be independent as well. has yesterday, I think. Yep. Yesterday released an SLM, as I called it. No one else was calling it this at the time, but it is an SLM that can run on phones. Yep. Okay. A small language model. Mm-hmm. The weirdness of this, because I cover news and I specifically cover AI stuff, is there were no Microsoft announcements.
Right.
There was none. Now, by the way, as of this moment, there are. They 12 or 15 hours later, they finally posted some stuff. But at the time, all that Microsoft officially posted was an academic white paper, which I can tell you, fascinating reading. You'll love it. It's almost as good as the Lord.
You need an app. This is the way.
Yep. It's brutal. I mean, even the font was designed to put you to sleep. It's crazy. But but what they did do was they reached out to every mainstream news organization on earth to see who would bite. And they all did. Like the New York Times wrote a 2,500 word article about how Microsoft is bringing language models down to the phone, which, not to be a jerk about it, is what everyone is doing. There is nothing unique about this at all. Now, in some slice of time, the claim they make, which is a very common claim for this kind of thing, is that they're seeing the performance, reliability, blah, 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 whatever, of ChatGPT 3.5, which we all know is like an older LLM that ran runs on the clock.
It works pretty well, especially on a narrow.
Works pretty well, and for something like that on a phone or whatever device, nothing. There's nothing wrong with that. It's excellent. The problem is everyone's doing this. Everyone and anyone who makes language models is doing this exact thing. And every single time one of these things is announced, the claims are always the same. They make they do that comparison depending on what type of language model it is. If it's an LLM, the target is always ChatGPT, sometimes Gemini of whatever stripe. If it's an SLM, we're going after, what are we going after? I don't know. We're going after the previous version of ChatGPT, right? This is the comparison because AI is moving so fast. And to me, the story here was not that Microsoft released another SLM, but rather that the way they were like, how do we not get lost in the news cycle? Because when a day goes by, and by the way, a day went by and another one was announced. I don't know if it was Meta or Mistral. Somebody announced another one and I didn't look. And I will, because I can't help myself, but I bet it's better than this damn thing that Microsoft released yesterday, because it's a day later, but whatever. That doesn't matter.
How would you even bench that? Like, how do you know?
Well, just based on in other words, I would compare like how they say how much it is or is not better than something, something, and then see where I can compare. But I've been doing this for 2 weeks and I can already tell you it's the same thing over and over again. Yeah. So bravo to Microsoft. They got into Reuters. They got into the New York Times. Normal people reading a paper, normal people don't read a paper, but normal people reading those publications, wherever they do it on their iPad or whatever, would have seen a story and maybe thought, because who knows, they don't know anything about this business. Like, oh my God, like there's been an advance. It's like, no, there hasn't.
No. There's some noise. But
yeah. So the FI stuff, and I'm assuming that is how you pronounce it.
Yes.
Is one of many examples of Microsoft flexing that, look, this has nothing to do with OpenAI.
Yeah. You know? No, I think it's smart, but this is a move towards right sizing, right? Like I would be way more worried that we were still humming up this peak of inflated expectations if they were talking about a GPT-5 coming out. Because where are you going to get the data, right? Like you've already indexed, what, you're going to index 8chan now? You think that's going to make it better? Like you've already indexed everything you can. There isn't another exponentially larger data set to be had.
My favorite data story, which is now over 25 years old, was Jim Gray was still alive and working on the SQL stuff at Microsoft, that genius. And they created something called the Terra server to show off SQL Server 7, which was the first in-house version of Microsoft's database. The previous ones were based on Sybase. And to prove the prowess of this thing, they had to come up with some gigantic data set. What were they going to use? So someone came up with the idea, well, there are these countries that at the time, it was not companies, it was countries that have satellites and they map the Earth and we could go to them. We'll go to the United States. I'll be the best one. Mm-hmm. And we'll get all of their geolocation data and we'll map the world. We'll call it Terra Server.
Right.
So they went to the U.S. government. They got it. And the U.S. government said, you can have everything but the United States. They're like, okay. And then they went to the Russian government and they said, hey, we're doing this thing. And I said, you can have everything except for Russia. They're like, cool. Now we have the whole world. So they combined that data, and that data took up on hard drives in a data center, something that was the size of like a Cape house. Like it was humongous. And I got to walk through it. you know, it was like a scene from Mission Impossible. Mm-hmm. Today, independent companies, you know, Google Maps, blah, 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 whatever. It's nothing, you know. So, yeah, how do you get data? Like, what's the version of that today?
Yeah.
I don't know. Every star in the sky, every space dust speck in the space. I don't have no idea. I don't know where you go from here.
Yeah.
I don't know how you scale up.
No, and I think that's the thing is they're not trying now. Now they're right-sizing. They're saying, hey, when we try and be the everything, we have more problems. And so now narrowing the scope and sharpening the confidence numbers to say, hey, if you're below 85% confidence, say you don't know.
That's right. And actually, the Microsoft, the SLM story we just kind of waltzed by kind of plays into this because I think one of the competitive concerns for Microsoft has got to be that Google Google and Apple both have these phone platforms. These are the mainstream kind of computing platforms for people. They're probably going to continue to be that, you know, in the future. A lot of that stuff's going to run on device, but they're going to do something in the cloud. Google has their own thing. Apple doesn't. So the companies are lining up. How does a company like Microsoft kind of break into this space? Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think it's going to be, I'm going to call this vertical use cases, for lack of a better term. Their models, their SLMs, this thing or other things, whatever, there'll be one that's really good at something and another that's really good at this. And you're an app or a service maker, you're going to run it something that runs on those phones and will run off the MPU on that device when it can and then do some cloud thing when it can't. There's a market opportunity there, right? Like where you become the, because every time you see these LLM, SLM announcements, there's always like, it's really good at this, you know? It nails this, you know? And I think that's, we're never going to stop talking about this. This will never end. You know, it's just going to evolve and evolve and evolve. And
it could become plumbing, but not this week, you know?
Yeah. No, it's too special use, special case, I guess, or whatever right now. It's evolving too fast.
You know, bit by bit, we don't talk about GitHub Copilot anymore. Everybody uses it. It just becomes a thing.
Well, and I don't remember the number, but the adoption on that's off the charts is something like 55%. And it is
because the returns are substantial.
Yep. And speaking of GitHub and success, goddamn, you know, they've nailed it on that. It's perfect.
And they're the original.
It's the perfect combination of things. Like it's the right solution. Like it's perfect.
It's a great data set with a skilled customer base. The compiler gets to say, like, there's many advantages, and it's just another form of automation for a group of people who make most of their living creating automations.
But what about all the compiler maker jobs we're losing, Richard? Do you have any concerns about that?
Yeah, both of them, right?
Oh, boy. Okay.
You know, I know compiler people, they really only want to work on compilers. They don't.
I'm just trying to think like that. I always use it when people talk about job losses. I always say, remember we used to have a woman in a low cut dress walking around with a tray where she would sell like cigarettes and stuff. Are we worried about that job loss?
Cigarettes, Tiburillos.
I mean, sometimes with the looking back, you can say like, maybe that wasn't such a great job. Like, actually, you know, we're spending our time we're doing better things.
A lot of coding people love writing compilers. That's a great little hobby. Writing your own compiler. I don't know. I mean, how I've used, but
if you're doing this as a hobby, I would say
you're a nerd.
Well, get outside, idiot. But no, I would say no. There's a whole wellspring of ideas there because
you
there's
often
all these
do
legacy
it in, computer science courses. I mean, that's a very common assignment.
Yeah, there you go. But I mean, I would like make a real world something. Like, what if you could bring C# to the Commodore 64? Or something, or whatever.
That's
you know,
a great
like do
idea.
Something awesome. Yeah. I mean, you know, do something like that. Like create a not just the language, but the you know, obviously the compiler and all that stuff, the environment, the runtime, and then you know, a framework that lets you target the specific capabilities of that device.
Right.
Like, you know, if you want to kill a weekend, I mean, I'm just saying, AI would probably be really good at that. The 6502 is really well known. You know, we could do this.
I think Hanselman was decoding some old 5 1/4 inch C64 floppy.
Yes, I saw that. I saw it literally on Facebook. He's like, does anybody, just throwing it out there, does anyone have like a 5 1/4 inch disk drive I could borrow?
Found one.
Like, dude.
He got it to work.
You're a father. Do something.
It's kids
you know, like, what are you
college,
doing?
Man.
Like, what's daddy doing? Oh, it's important work. Is it? No. No, I think that's cool. That's fine. I'm joking. I thought that was fun. And in the same vein that OpenAI had come up with a sneak peek of that video tool, Microsoft came out with a freaky deaky. Did you see this thing? The Vasa one talking face AI.
Yeah, it's really something.
Oh, it's
that's
so
gonna
weird.
Be us on the podcast.
Oh, is it weird?
It's just gonna be like a picture of me and it's gonna be going you know, the whole time. Because that's I mean, it's pretty much what I do anyway. And then train it with like three words, and then it will just say things like literally all the time, or I don't know.
Like wow. You know,
the one that gets me is it speaking in Japanese in your voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wild, isn't it?
In real life.
Yeah.
It's really something.
It's the only way I'm going to hear it. Yeah. So I mean, they have not released this, right? This is just like, they're like, hey, we can do this. We're kind of freaked out.
It's an MSR project. Yeah.
Yeah. So yikes. And this is like, it's just scary.
It's weird.
Some of these are weird.
Yeah.
They're weird.
Yeah, my favorite is the singing Mona Lisa.
Uncanny about them.
Yeah, well,
yeah,
it's Uncanny Valley. Here's the singing Mona Lisa
is the classic. This is the
she's singing
the rapping
paparazzi.
Mona Lisa.
Yeah, I don't think I can get the audio for you, but you can. You probably don't need it. Yeah.
Yep.
And weird. They're all strange. They're all freaky, right?
Yeah. It's very, it's got an uncanny streak to it, but boy, you'd be tough set to catch them all.
This is going to play into like the de-aging stuff, you know, like the Star Wars movies where they have like Princess Leia or the recent Harrison Ford de-aging thing in the Indiana Jones movie where
it's just going to get cheaper.
It's just easy. It's going to be a feature of the iPhone, you know?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
You know who's going to use this is animators. I mean,
yep,
fantastic for that.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Homer Simpson will finally have a good lip sync.
I don't think that might ruin that experience.
It might actually.
That's kind of cool. Google last week, I think it was, announced a massive reorg, and it's hard not to read between the lines of that. You know, I don't know if anyone paid attention to this. I kind of laser focused right on the Pixel part of it, or the, I'll call it, it was devices and services, whatever they're calling it. Because they're actually, Pixel and Android have not ever been in the same business / team or whatever. And now they are. Yeah. And that's weird. Also, maybe this is coincidental. I might have mentioned last week the email I got from Google One telling me they're taking away all my exclusive features and giving them to everybody. But it's hard for me not to think that this is related to that, right? Like they're just spreading this stuff everywhere. Like, in other words, Google has these kind of AI capabilities. They bring them to like a high-end Samsung phone or phones. Those things have great MPUs, so that stuff works well. And you kind of wonder, like, A, why are you making your own Tensor chips then? And also B, like, what, maybe this needs to be everywhere, and maybe it will be. Maybe that's part of the point of this. We'll see what comes out of this. But this is literally around accelerating the use of AI consistently across the company and being able to come to market more quickly and make decisions more quickly. And well, in Google's
hope world, it makes a difference, you know, because they've been struggling with this, no question.
Yeah, I always wonder if Google's problems are more outside perception than reality, but then why would I know I'm outside? So.
Yeah. They have a tough time communicating with the public for sure.
I wish them well. Although Google, like Intel, I mean, Google's dominant, and then it's like, well, maybe we don't need them anymore. We'll see. And then speaking of maybe we won't need them anymore, because this is the other concern, you know, I was talking about this issue for Windows with other devices and the Qualcomm chipsets. When you think about AI, if AI is everywhere, what's the, you know, if I can have a free service or a cheap service sit alongside Word and help me write, why would I pay for Microsoft Copilot, right? Yeah. So the graphic design version of this, of course, is Photoshop, and Adobe spent billions creating their own supposedly safe, wasn't tainted in any way, image library, and just kidding. But fine. And of course, you know, they're putting these capabilities into Photoshop and they look awesome, right? And not just Photoshop, I mean, across their
screen, even Adobe Express.
All those tools. And then I don't know if this came up last week, but last week they announced something about generative AI for video in Premiere, right? And so, yeah, of course, right? But again, you know, we'll see. So
we've been playing with the audio features for podcasts that Adobe's made, and they mostly for noise removal and, you know,
lifted a motorcycle sound right out of an audio track like nothing. It's just
That's a great example. But let me throw an example at you of why this is my concern. Exactly. That feature is in Clipchamp, which is free.
Ah, right.
Now, I'm not saying it's as good. I literally have no idea. Mm-hmm. I literally have no idea. And Clipchamp is for video. But, right. Using Clipchamp as part of a workflow to create an audio podcast is probably not a great idea. But if it's audio and video, it might be a good idea. But that is my point. It's a great example because a company like Adobe, like Microsoft in the productivity mm-hmm. space or Google, has this body of work and a history and skills, and they're going to do this great. But AI is so powerful. I think this stuff is going to spread far and wide and
disruptive.
I don't know if you've looked at the Adobe CC pricing lately. It's expensive. Yeah,
you're kidding. And all the more reason they need to implement stuff for their customer base to stay in place. They're going to flee pretty quickly.
Yeah. I mean, there's something to be said for inertia, and you're used to the tools and it's comfortable and whatever, and you're deeply invested in that. And I get that. But, for people like when I came up to look at video most recently, I don't have any thing to fall back on. I don't have to use some tool I've been using for 10 years or whatever. So when I find something like really simple and stupid simple like Clipchamp, which almost seems like a play school tool, that's a wonderful find for like someone who's I don't intend to become a videographer or whatever. So
no, and I think it's an democratization of this, right? That it's just going to be less expensive to do more impressive things. Making out an animation, creating CGI characters like
right.
This used to be Industrial Light and Magic, and now it's in your iPhone.
I know. It's incredible. We used to make documentaries about how they would like make Terminator 2 or The Abyss or whatever.
Exactly.
And it's like, I do that between Instagram and Gmail do it with my iPhone. Finger
stretching around on my screen.
I mean, I'm old, but I mean, my kid's good.
Yeah.
I can't even type on a phone. You think I'm going to edit a video on a phone?
You're never going to make ridiculous. It a TikToker, Paul. Come on.
No, I'm absolutely not. I don't know. Yeah. Well, maybe with the rapping AI thing, I could do it. That would be how I'd be like news, the dancing old guy in the Six Flag ads. The guy like, da, 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 da,
TikTok's days are numbered. I would make an Insta reel instead.
That's a good point. That's actually a good point.
With the future.
Yep. It is more of a future than Vision Pro. Am I right? No, sorry. So if you thought the Apple card was ridiculous, I got something for you.
Is there an Xbox card in my future?
No, there is an Xbox card though. And I am worried about the future of our planet. Here's the thing. When it comes to credit cards and rewards points and all that stuff, some of them are really good. And then some of them are not. And this is not good. this is not good. You can earn like 3 points per dollar, which is the typical midline for this stuff. If you like use Grubhub and DoorDash, but that stuff's all over the place. Most purchases are 1 point, which is nothing, I saw a great article. It might've been like Macworld even. It was a Mac publication where they actually went to one of those credit card expert, like guys who like play the credit card game and do all the points and all that stuff. And they were like, hey, is the Apple card a good, buy,
right.
a good deal? Like, listen, let's say you spent $10,000 at Apple.com in 1 year. Let's just $10,000. And you get the 3 points back on that. It's like, $300? It's like, are you out of mind? Mind? Like,
Adapter. That's about it.
Or like a cleaning cloth or something. Like, everyone's different and everyone has different needs and everyone does different things. But like, we use a Costco card for a lot of stuff because, Costco gas and blah, blah, whatever it is. But Amazon, we have an Amazon card for Amazon purchases, whatever. But, one of the things we've done is like we fly to Mexico a lot. It's always the same airline. We use that card a lot. And I mean,
you get benefits.
Here's the benefit. I believe, I could be wrong, but I think of the last, let's say, 8 sets of flights, we flew business class, 7 of them, and the other one of those seats was free.
Right.
So that's why you do it. So we're not spending any more money. We're just spending it on that card. So the Xbox, if you want to have a MasterCard that has an Xbox logo on it, I mean, go to town, but don't do this thinking you're going to.
There's no free games in the end.
No, there's little things. I mean, it's just my point is like there is, you can redeem points for Xbox stuff.
There's better ways to do this.
Just don't. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Just buy them.
If you just want to get cash, I mean, just use a Costco card. They give you, I think they give you a check once or twice a year, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Spend that on Xbox games. That's a much better deal.
Yeah.
Much better deal. You'd make a, and that's without me even thinking about it. There are probably other deals that are even better. So anyway, it exists is my only point. Mm-hmm. And actually, my other point is don't do it. look, if you want to play this game, do. I mean, and do it right. But this is not a solution. Indie game part of Xbox is called ID at Xbox, and they are doing a digital showcase in tandem with IGN next week to promote some of the upcoming indie games for the Xbox platform. So I feel like we're in a time period now where two things are happening. One, every 2 weeks, there's a new showcase for games. And two, none of them are for Activision Blizzard games. What's happening? What are you doing?
I was going to ask.
What are you doing?
You snuck that one in, Paul.
Come on. I pay $15 a month for Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. I want this money back. I don't. Where is it? Where's the stuff?
Maybe by October.
I think this came up last week, but my wife and I started watching that Fallout TV series.
Oh, yes.
Brilliant. I love it. And I will say video game movies are aren't as many comic book movies. I think this came up, but most of them are garbage. Right. And the Last of Us TV show was
a breakthrough, wasn't it?
It got some criticism for being an almost like shot by shot remake of the game. Honestly, I never played the game. So to me, I was like, who cares? Like, that doesn't bug me. The Fallout TV show, I sort of assumed it was going to mirror one of the games. It doesn't. If you look at the history or, you know, the fake history of the games, it comes right after the last game chronologically. Mm-hmm. I think it's really well done. My wife thinks it's a little violent.
It's extremely violent. Yes.
Yeah, there are
it's adult.
Holes and yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Heads crushed and blown up. And the amount of damage that happens to heads in this movie, I think, has already surpassed Game of Thrones. Like, it's kind of crazy. But you know what? It's super high quality. It's really well done. I love the alternate history thing. This is clearly like a 1950s U.S. transistor-based future where everything was, you know, nuclear war, blah, 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 whatever. Yeah. Awesome. I love post-apocalyptic stuff. So the only thing that would be better is if the apes from the Planet of the Apes rode over the hill at the end of the last show of the season, and then we can see what happens next year.
But it's post-apocalypse with that sort of neo chrome,
like steampunky kind
it's
of
retro futurism. Yeah, it's fantastic.
I love it. It's really fun
with some country music thrown in. So how can you go wrong?
There's also a lot of good kind of drama to it. This and without giving anything away, I mean, just these kind of secrets about like the vault next to the vault from the main character's vault and what actually happened there. Like I just think it's really well done. And it's a good story. Well told. Never played the games, you know, Halo TV series.
Really not so great much. Game.
The Doom movie, right. With the Rock where for like 1 minute, you see the first person view, a little goofy, not great. The first Resident Evil movie with Mila, I thought was very good. Classic. I actually really liked that movie. Yeah, and then they go off a cliff and then go way past the cliff and keep going down somehow. But this is very good. I think people, you know, I would look at it.
It makes you want to play Fallout again, though, doesn't it?
It does. And and by the way, Fallout adoption has exploded in the way this game. I think we're like, I don't remember the numbers, but like the amount of people playing the game has exploded. Like, it's really good.
I'm playing the mobile version is cute, and you get a Vault 32 uniform, so I can promoting the
so
TV
is this
show.
What kind of a game is this, like, what do
you're
you call this?
In the vault, you're a vault master, and so you've got your vault. It's a kind of
no
like,
I mean like is it it's not a shooter
no, it's a resource game. So you have, you get people show see somebody showed up at the door, and then I gotta drag him in to let me put him in this living quarters here. And, you know, and you have to create energy and food and water. And then there's a whole bunch of, you know, there's stuff. It's a survival game, I guess, is how you would. Right. It's actually a pretty deep game. Yeah, it's a resource game. It's actually a surprisingly good game. And as you get.
I love the whole aesthetic. The screen. Yeah, it's got the same. Looking at that, which kind of emulates like a CRT.
And you can zoom in so you can see the guys are in there.
I can level
all the electronics are humongous because they have transistors in them. Yeah. You know, it's just like, I think it's fun. Like it's
neat. I had played this before and I downloaded it again because after the TV show, I said,
watching it. You're like,
play Fallout. Like, yeah.
It's a good world. It's a good space for a number of seasons. Like they could go in all kinds of directions.
Oh yeah. That's the nice thing about not following the plot of the game. Is really they've just got the world of the game.
I sort of assumed the first season would be like whatever game and you're in whatever place and then we go to like West Virginia and then Boston and Atlantic City, whatever every season.
I think they're in Boston this time, aren't they? I think they're in Boston, aren't they? Or near Boston? I can't tell. In the TV show.
No, that's
Oh no, they're in California, aren't they? Because there's Santa Monica.
That's very clearly the Santa Monica Pier. That's Los Angeles.
Yeah. And they were also definitely using shots from New Vegas of the military bases outside of Las Vegas.
Right.
So
it's fun.
Which was that's a big scene in the New Vegas game.
Right.
I'm not saying it was a shot for shot, but there's definitely a couple of pullbacks where it's like, I have played the game looking at the exact view.
Nice. See, I went to Wikipedia and a couple of places and kind of just read through the plots of each of the games and the kind of themes and all the stuff and kind of get, you know, because a lot of the, you know, the creatures and the situations and the devices and all the stuff is obviously from the, you know, from the games.
And it's chronologically coupled to the games and it's post New Vegas.
That's right. Yeah.
And you played positive towards that scenario, then they have more energy. They have air to be activated. Like there's a lot of stuff.
For you nerds in the audience, by which I mean you in the audience, one of the things that I guess they're doing in the show, well, one of the things that is a side product of the show is that some of the games have like multiple outcomes. So in some version of the game, some guy might live or die or some situation may or may not happen. And in the show, they've referenced some of these things and it's, of course, it can only be one of the outcomes. So that becomes canon, which is a big issue in the universe, content fields or whatever. To me,
There was certainly a scenario playing New Vegas where that base was destroyed.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't know the exact details.
The fact that the base is there and enhanced, more powerful than ever, it's a sign of, oh, that means you played it this way.
That's right. That version of the ending is canon. Yeah. So, you know, is what happened with air quotes around it.
But there's two things going on there. Now I'm going down, getting into plot stuff, right? Like, because the Brotherhood of Steel is there too, and there's a whole subplot.
Yeah, be careful not to give away the whole thing. But and I think they do a good job with this. Basically, three main and intersecting storylines where these characters kind of, you know, intersect, and they have their own backgrounds and everything. Anyway, I think it's great. My wife tolerates it, but I mostly because it's just super violent.
It's so violent.
It's not her type of show, but I think she recognizes just the quality of it. It's good. It's well made, and the actors are all great, and the story's great. And
I love her. She's adorable, the lead.
Yeah,
the main character. It's funny because that's why my wife likes it, is because it's so violent. Lisa loves the violence. She loves it. She says, oh, this is great. Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to have to do like a horror movie marathon sometime.
She was showing our son Saw when he was like six. I mean, she loves
of my top three parenting moments was watching The Shining with my daughter for the first time. And she might've been 8 to 10, whatever year, you know, whatever age. And we're watching it together. It's just us.
Lights are on.
That's a terrifying film.
Yep. It's one of the best movies ever made. And there's a scene where the little kid goes into that room and it says red rum written in probably lipstick or whatever, or just maybe in the finger, whatever. And she says, we're just sitting there and she goes, what does that mean? And I'm like, we'll find out. She goes, we're going to find out. Right. And I paused it and I was like, you don't know what that means. You're experiencing this for the first time. Oh, like if I could selectively wipe my memory and watch like Star Wars again for the first time, I would do that every weekend. And I was like, I'm going to get to see this. Like you're going to understand like that.
Isn't that nice?
Awesome.
It's a wonderful feeling. Here comes Lisa. Not Saw. He didn't watch Saw. He was watching Halloween. Actually, he always wants to watch Saw, right? If you finally let him watch Saw? When he was older. Well, correction. I apologize. Not mean to cast aspersions. Red Rum.
Awesome. I would say people that hate horror movies, you got to watch The Exorcist and you have to watch The Shining. And actually the original Halloween, I would throw that in
there too. Mm-hmm. First Exorcist.
Yeah.
First Exorcist. And and what was the one with Damien?
The Omen. The original Omen. 1976.
First Omen.
Gregory Peck. Yeah, classic.
Great.
Actually, the first two. Second one's great too.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm getting chills just thinking about it. All right. Guess what? We're here. The back of the book is coming up next. But first, can I beg for a little bit? I'd love to have you as a member of Club Twit. I don't, you know, you guys weren't here, but Sunday we had the open studio and we had a bunch of people come by. We all went to Lagunitas afterwards. And it really brought home to me something I've known always, but it really brought home to me how cool our Club Twit members are. Smart, accomplished. It's a wonderful hang. And it's one of the great reasons to join Club Twit. Of course, you get ad-free versions of all the shows, and you get the additional stuff like Stacey's Book Club coming up tomorrow. You still have time to read the Babaverse. It won't take you long. We Are Legion, the first volume of the Babaverse, which is a great book. We're going to talk about that tomorrow on Stacey's Book Club. And then pick another one. We give you video versions of Paul's Hands on Windows. Everybody can listen to Hands on Windows. You want to see the pictures, join the club, things like that, because we're trying to give you some bonuses. But more and more, I realize the Discord and the smart people in there really is worth the price of admission. If you've got a question, if you want to talk about a topic that geeks are into, and it doesn't have to be our shows, everything from coding to anime to travel, hard liquor, spirits, beer, they're in there, and they're wonderful, smart, great people. So if you're looking for a community to join, really the Twit community is the best. And you can really get into it by joining the club. Now, the main reason the club exists, that $7 a month makes a big difference in our ability to continue to produce shows and to produce new shows for you. We really want to do that. I think the times, they are a-changing. And as things get more and more interesting in the tech sphere, I think you need, I know I do, a place to go to listen, to learn about this stuff, to hear journalists who know their stuff talk about it without fear of favor. We are not, we're not Twitchers. We're not tubers. We have, you know, no investments in these companies. We cover the companies with absolute objectivity. And I think that that's even more important now than ever. If you want to support us, if you want to join this great, vibrant community, $7 a month, go to twit.tv/clubtwit. And that's all I'm going to say about it. I don't want to harangue you. But it helps us an awful lot. We really need your help. And I think it's a great benefit. All right, let's continue on with the back of the book, as I like to call it, and Paul Thurrott's tips and picks. Paul?
Someone just sent me a cartoon that it's like two panels, and it's like, my daughter says you work at Microsoft. He's like, yes, I do. What do you work on? The new Outlook. He says, you have exactly 10 seconds to get the F out of my house. I love it. That's good. Anyway, sorry.
We're gone.
So my tip and app pick of the week are both related to the certification stuff that I kind of obsess over these days because I can't stand it, and it's getting worse. And of course, we've all heard the joke that most people only run Microsoft Edge once, and that's so they can install Google Chrome or whatever browser they prefer. And that's, by the way, it's not a joke. That sadly is true. But you can avoid even that. I made a short video. It's going to be like a minute or something. You can install any browser and never run Edge even once, unless of course you click on like.
Nice.
And you do it, and just do it with WinGet, right?
Of course, yeah.
Right. Winget search, name of browser, we'll give you the exact code you need, and then Winget install, name of
Is Winget installed on all versions of Windows?
Yep. It's installed by default in Windows 11. Windows 10, I think you might have to install it separately.
Okay. Now, it's a command line. Is that going to scare people?
It is the simplest thing in the world. That's the point. It's so, why do I say things like this? I didn't mean even my wife, even a non-technical person, because my wife is probably smarter than I am, who doesn't care about this stuff, could handle this easily. It's simple. You don't have to.
So it's a command line. So you could go into the terminal and type winget, but if you want to use it.
Actually, what you do is run terminal.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to just type winget.
No, because you want the terminal.
Okay.
No, because you might be running a couple of commands, so you might want to just look. So just run terminal.
Okay. So I'm going to open a command
and then type
prompt.
In Winget search, you know, Firefox. Just.
And then it's going to give you all the options. Do you agree? Yes, I agree.
Yeah. And of course, when you hit yes, it runs Edge. So it gives you a list. And
No, it didn't.
Well, no, but it gives you a list. And then the top one, the one that's like an ID, that's a weird ID code, that will install that one from the store. So if you you can copy and paste it with the, you know, select it with the mouse and then just type Winget install and whatever that code is.
Oh, and you have to use this code, huh? That's what the command is.
That's why you search. Because, you know, if it's a web app, typically it will be something like Firefox.Firefox, right?
Right.
Google.Chrome, Brave.Brave. I know the ones I can think of. I don't remember all the, you know, I don't remember every browser's like, you know, code, but it's different for each.
It's Google.Chrome.
Yep. Super easy.
And there it is. Look at that. Oh, I already have it. Yeah.
You already have it? You're good to go.
I'm good to go.
Not surprising.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, it's not simple. Surprising because that's simple, the window simple, right simple. Behind the Winget prompt. So if you...
Yeah, you're right. You can see
it. Yeah, Winget... Yeah.
But that's the beauty of it.
Runs
right?
Everything, I mean,
so
right?
Like, I wrote a script that bulk installs all the apps I want to use. And what's nice, one of the other nice things about it is I can bring it to a computer where I just kind of manually install stuff, run it, and it just skips over the ones that are already installed. Right?
That's
it
nice.
It installs the other stuff. It's nice. It's really nice. Winget is, you know, well, I mean, people have been using package managers for years. So like, you're cute, Paul. Microsoft finally got a package manager 25 years later. I get it. But it's magic and it's wonderful. And
this
it's
is the best way. Solutions. Absolutely. This is what I'm going to do for
my God. It's the
that's
best.
That's great.
Yep.
Because I'm used to using package managers. You know, that's
it. Yeah. Apt or whatever. Or yeah, exactly. Chocolatey.
Yeah.
Homebrew on the Mac is a
right,
good one.
Right. Great. I'm installing Vivaldi. It's done.
There you go.
Look at that. There it is.
Dun, bum, bum.
Dun, dun, dun. Welcome. Now, here's a thousand
Leo,
things
listen,
you can do.
We have 41 minutes before the show ends, so we can't really sit here while you figure this. But,
Block it, baby.
There is a lot. No, there's a lot going on. It's true. Yeah. But you know what? I'm kind of digging this browser. It's beautiful on mobile, too. One of the tricks on mobile is you want to find a browser that has like a reading mode kind of a deal, right? Where you hit an article, it just brings it up as text. And this browser actually does not have that. So that's kind of a weird little problem with it. But Opera does, Brave does, although it's an optional thing. You know, Safari, I think, does.
I'm going to make it Google human. Oh, that's human? Let's do beach. That's human.
Oh, yeah. You know what? The browser company, .arc, is in there.
Yeah. They're all in there.
Arc
yeah.
is in there?
Which?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. You don't need an invite anymore? Is that why? Or would it ask for your invite?
I don't know if that's why, but you do not need an invite anymore. but it is in there.
Let me do this.
I mean, honestly, anyone with the URL could have downloaded it at any time, as it turns out.
But, oh, really? Oh.
Yeah, they weren't being super cute about it.
Oh, wow. There's a lot of arcs. Okay. Oh, boy.
Yeah, look for its browser. It's probably what?
The browser company.arc. Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
See it part way down
there. It is. Yeah.
Yeah. So the ones that have weird codes, those are coming out of the store. The ones that are name.name are coming from the web, from the, you know, the Winget repository or whatever. But again, like I said, it's kind of a joke tip in a way because, like, honestly, who cares? But if you're so offended by Edge, and God love you, you don't even have
to launch it. Not once.
Yeah.
This
There's
is
a
awesome.
Tagline for you. Not
you
even
never
once.
Have to launch it once.
Not on my computer.
Hey, this
Not
is
even
great.
One.
And if you're
Related
on Windows 10,
this,
you can way. Install Winget. And
I think so. Like when I brought up Windows 10 a few weeks ago, I'm pretty sure I had to download Winget. I don't think it was included.
Where's my Arc? Oh, I guess I have to. It didn't run it like it did Vivaldi.
I love how quickly you moved past Vivaldi.
configured it and I'm done. Yeah,
it's really colorful.
Hey, is there a deer in that woods? No, it's just a log.
Oh, fun.
Up oh, there's Arc. Hello, Arc. Look at that.
So my nice. App pick is oddly well, not oddly, it's related to it, but oddly these didn't happen together. I the Edge Winget thing I did a week ago, and then since then NT Dev, who previously created something called Tiny 11, which is a customized version of the Windows 11 install ISO, created something else called Tiny 11 Builder. So the problem with downloading an ISO from someone who's not Microsoft is you don't know, right? You don't know what's on there. So what this tool is a PowerShell script that uses Microsoft's own deployment tool. So you have to download the script, which is nothing, and then two tiny little utilities that sit in the same folder. You run the script, and then it says, well, which one do you want to install? Home, Pro, which language, yada, yada, yada. And then it creates a custom ISO for you on the fly. And because it's a PowerShell script, you can, A, look at it, make sure it's not doing anything stupid, but also, B, you could potentially have not done this, customize it, right? So the goal of Tiny 11 is to make the Windows 11 install as small as possible and also to bypass some of those hardware restrictions during setup. I don't really have these concerns. Like I have good computers, right? So I'm not worried about running Windows 11 on a 4 gigabyte system or whatever it is. The way he accomplishes this goal is to remove a bunch of the stuff that comes with Windows 11. And it's also a really clean install in the sense that like the start menu has like two or three icons on it. There's no crapper, obviously. There's no Edge or OneDrive, interestingly. So I tested it over the weekend. It doesn't actually solve the big problems I have. And there are too many ways in, for me anyway, to make Edge kind of occur, you know, out of the blue, because it can't install, right?
Edge disappears. Which
is weird because when I did Tiny 11 back in December, there's no Edge. Same thing. It's the same type of install. There's no Edge. That thing's still going strong. I used it fairly regularly. It's all up to date. Edge has never occurred on that computer. But the two times I clean installed with Tiny 11 Builder, I got Edge to pop its ugly head up somehow. And I think if you run a like Clipchamp or Media Player and some other apps, use the WebView 2 runtime that is included with Microsoft Edge. And if you don't have Microsoft Edge installed, it will actually just auto-install that component. That doesn't seem to be what makes the browser install, but one of the things that does, and I've tried to find an explicit list of what's included in this, but if you install the Microsoft Office suite from Microsoft 365, you're going to get Edge eventually. Like it just happens. And Edge is required for Copilot, and Copilot is in Office, and I think that might be why that might be the trigger now, because they built Copilot into there, and they use like a web extensibility model and blah, blah. I don't know. I'm still, but again, like this is an interesting tool. It's free. It's a custom version of the Windows 11 ISO. And I think we're going to see some interesting customizations, not just from the original developer, but from third parties, because people are going to now look at this and say, how can I maybe make this better or different? So it's something to know about. It's very interesting.
Nice.
Yeah. Good stuff.
All right. All right. I guess that's time for you, Mr. Okay. Richard Campbell in Sweden, where it's the middle of the night.
Yeah, it's getting late. Yeah, no two ways about it. Definitely getting late. This week's show, 9:29, I did actually back at the MVP Summit in person with Sydney Smith, who's one of the PowerShell principals. And we were talking about the new version of PowerShell is about to be released, which was 7.4. It's out now. And both version 6 and 7 came out as more open source cross-platform versions of PowerShell. So a lot of folks stuck with 5.1. If you only were a Windows shop and that's what you use PowerShell for, because in order to make it cross-platform, they took away a lot of features. And so there's been a non-trivial amount of folks that stuck around with 5.1. And in the meantime, they've gone on and added a lot of new features. The big thing about 7.4 was two features that have been in development, sort of in beta, available for you to grab beta bits for in PowerShell 7, both PS Resource Get and PS Readline. I finally got to their sort of 1.0 part, so we were talking about that. But in some ways, we kind of hijacked our own conversation. It was like, when are we going to get people off of 5.1? And Sydney was pretty insistent. It's like, we're in feature parity now. You're giving up nothing. In fact, you're gaining a whole bunch of stuff. So a couple of versions down the path now, it's time to really start, if you're on 5.1, start looking at the latest version, because it'll do everything you currently wanted to do and many things you never hoped you could do. So it was a fun conversation. She's brilliant as always, deeply immersed in the product, taking the product further. So much more very secure version of PowerShell, very capable, and runs fine on a Mac. runs. It'll even do security settings in Linux, and it's got all the parity features from the old version in 7 now. So
nice.
Well worth your time.
Nice.
Yeah, PowerShell 5.1 is like .NET Framework 4.8.
Whatever, right? It's exactly, like, you're exactly
the
right.
Cockroach, you know, just continuing.
Oh, yeah, it's never going to go away. It also, 5.1 comes with everything. So yep. You generally have to go get the current versions. And a lot of folks are just not even familiar with going and fetching a new version of PowerShell.
I mean, they advertise it in Terminal. If you go get the version on the web, right? Because it's like Windows PowerShell and PowerShell, like, or something like that. Like
different. Yep. Yeah.
Different brands.
Better in every way.
It's newer, so it's better.
Mm. Yeah, let's go now to the Glens of the world, I think. Yes?
I've been holding off doing the Divin because I haven't opened any bottles. And I'm going to get them home first. And we had a good time last week. A couple weeks ago doing the Dalwhinnie, and then we went to Four Roses, so I figured I'd dip back into that classics collection with the Glenkinchie. Now, this is a lowland whiskey, and just as a little bit of a reminder, this distillery is actually quite close to Edinburgh. Edinburgh and Glasgow are all the areas that we call the lowlands. There are very few distilleries in there today. There used to be many more. They're down to maybe about 6 operating, although the rumor has it that the Rosebank distillery is going to open up again, which is exciting. Lowlands, one of the original regions. There used to only be 4 whiskey regions they sort of defined. The Lowlands was that area around Edinburgh and Glasgow, Fife, Dumfries, Galloway, that kind of thing. In the past, we talk about Auchintoshan, which is also a Lowland whiskey. And then Islay down in the southwest, island with very few trees. That's why they're so heavy on the peat. We've talked about Bowmore and Portiskeag. And then east of Islay is Campbelltown, which is the peninsula on the south part, a little more protected. So they have more options there. And again, another place that used to have a lot of distilleries, but is down to like 3. And then everything else was called Highlands, which they've now sort of divvied the Highlands up. The Highlands encompass this huge area above the big cities in the Highlands and all the way up onto the coast. So that's 75% of distilleries these days. So the Spey side is recognized separately from the rest of the Highlands because it's along the Spey River. It by itself is 60 distilleries in a relatively small area. And then I think it's only fair to carve the islands off on their own, which most people do these days. So that stretches from just north of Islay with Arran and Jura, Mull, Orkney, all the way up to Skye, which is in the northwest, which is where Talisker is. And all make a unique kind of whiskey themselves. The island whiskeys tend to be a bit peatier, not as peaty as many Islays, saltier. And that makes the Highlands a bit more of a consistent version now, even though you're still talking a very big region when you talk about Highlands. But we were talking about a lowland. We were talking about one of the few, the Glenkinchie. Things to know about it. Well, it's owned by Diageo because it was once owned by United Distillers since it was part of that collection. Although Diageo refers to Glenkinchie as one of the 4 corners of Johnnie Walker. Huh? And so Diageo is one of the largest owners of Scottish distilleries. They make one of the most popular scotches in the world, Johnnie Walker, the variety of versions, which they use by blending many distilleries' whiskeys into it, and most of which have no visible brand, ones you've never heard of. The 4 corners, the corner distilleries of Johnnie Walker are Glenkinchie in the Lowlands, Cow Ila in Islay, Plianish in the Highlands, and Cardew in Speyside. Interesting, and most people haven't heard of Cardew. Plianish, too, is pretty rare. Cow Ila has a good brand. Fairly well known, but those are the 4 pillars. The Glenkinchie Distillery itself is fairly old. 1825 is the first mention of a distillery in that location, about 15 imperial miles east, southeast of Edinburgh. It was called the Milton Distillery when it first opened, but within a decade or so, it was renamed to Glenkinchie in the perversion of names in that particular area. Went bankrupt a few years later. 1853, and then it was sold to a local farmer who made it into a sawmill, and it stayed a sawmill for 30 years or so. 1881, a group of Edinburgh investors bought it and converted it back to a distillery, calling it Glenkinchie once again, and it continued to function through there. It stayed in business through the Prohibition. It was one of the very few distilleries that was allowed to operate through World War II. It, like most distilleries, modernized in the late 60s, 70s, stopped doing its own maltings, improved some of the technology. Today, it's still a fairly simple distillery, mostly a 70s, 80s technology distillery. It has one big 9-ton mash tun, one of the biggest ones in the industry, 6 washbacks, and just 1 pair of stills. It puts out 2.5 million liters of spirits a year, of which 90% of which goes into Johnny Walker blends. So the few bottles that you see on the shelves of Glenkinchie, and you can get in the U.S., represent a very small portion of their overall production. For the most part, it was not a well-known distillery until the United Distillers did their classic malts in the 1980s. And back then, the classic malt they referred to for the lowlands was Glenkinchie 10, which you really can't get anymore. I went searching on the rare whiskey sites for Glenkinchie 10 from the 1980s, and occasionally you can find a bottle for about $500 US, which I would not pay. There's no reason to buy that. They do make distiller's editions once in a while, usually with some interesting finishing barrels, and they'll be about $150 or so. But the standard product is a 12, and it is absolutely a classic lowland, which is to say, it tends towards the lighter side, sort of grassy and fruity notes. Not too big, not too harsh, not a real strong flavor. It's only coming in at about 46%, so it's not going to punch your eyes out. You know, it's a nice, gentle dram, one you can count on, like the Dalwhinnie. It's just approachable, and about $80. So not the cheapest bottle of whiskey out there, but not the most expensive either, and something a little different. You know, we generally drink, you're either into the peat and you're drinking your Islay, or you love the Spey's with their big, rich sherry casks and so forth. This is neither of those. This is real simple whiskey, old style, and it's good. You should try some.
Okay. I'll do it right now. Malts.com. Because it's Diageo.
That's the Diageo site. Yep, we were there for Dalwhinnie as well.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, thank you, Mr. Richard Campbell, host of Run As Radio and .NET Rocks at runasradio.com. Mm. Great to have you on, as always, from Sweden. Safe travels home.
Yeah, we'll get to do a few weeks of shows at home with the new desk, hey. Including I'm going to have it set up so I can do a standing.
Nice.
Nice.
Well, Did you try that on.
Are you going to stand for 2 hours or whatever it is like?
Yeah, yikes. I think so, 2.5.
I'd be a little nervous about that.
Did you get a custom desk or something special?
No, I had the raised lower desk already, but I did also get a custom desk, which is not being used for the video stack, but just to fill the room fully.
Nice.
But I got it all installed the day before I had to leave for this trip, so it's only half built. I've got to finish off. I didn't get the video rig built yet, but it's something to do when I get home.
Ain't no desk like a custom desk.
They tell me.
Paul Thurrott, do you have a custom desk?
No, I have an IKEA desk.
Oh, that's as far from custom.
It's about as far as, yeah, exactly.
The same desk as 100 million others.
Yep. And here I am in Sweden. I can go pick one up.
Oh, yeah.
I probably had more trouble building it than most, but that's a personal problem.
Actually, last time I had to do IKEA furniture, I hired my brother-in-law.
Good call.
I felt bad about it, but he seemed to enjoy it. So, okay.
I have cried while trying to build IKEA furniture.
It's not idea of fun. That's for sure.
Yep.
That's for dang sure. Paul is at thurrott.com, thurrott.com. Become a premium member for the best experience. I am, and it's worth it. You should also check out his books at leanpub.com. That includes Windows Everywhere, a tour through the history of Windows by its programming languages. You can also get the... Is that correct characterization? That was my sense.
It's more like... That's part of it. It's sort of like a history of Windows as seen through the eyes of almost developers or the people who are writing apps for it.
And there you go.
the forces inside and outside of Microsoft that most normal people don't know about that kind of cause things to change over time?
It's a very special book.
I think it's, I mean, I it's wrote unique. It, so obviously, I mean, I've been rereading parts of it because I'm going to be updating it soon. And I got to say, I like
good.
It.
You did a good job, my friend. You did a good job.
And that's a weird thing to say about your own.
And book, well, and I know because I'm a premium member and a lot of it was on the premium as you were writing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
You can also join Paul and Richard right here every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. That's when we record Windows Weekly, the stream live at YouTube, youtube.com/twit. Hit smash the bell. I just like saying it. Smash the bell. And that way you'll get a notification when we go live. All of our shows.
Oh, I know you're cool when you say stuff like that.
Smash the bell, kids. He's talking the language of the youth.
Yeah. We also are on YouTube as a dedicated channel. A great way to share clips. And we encourage you to do that. It's a great way to turn other people on to this greatest show within the astronomical units of the of the solar system.
That's a disappointing qualifier, but okay, fair enough.
Okay, in the universe, the greatest Microsoft show in the universe.
It's just so much easier when you say that. There you
yeah.
go.
Why, you know, why not?
You don't have to qualify it. Who's going to challenge us?
And if they do, hey, that's news. what else? Oh, you can subscribe in your favorite podcast player. That's another way to get it. And actually, that's a great way. There's audio and there's video of every show. Don't forget Paul's Hands-On Windows show. Open to all now. You can subscribe to the audio. And if you're a club member, get the video as well. It's a really good show. You did a whole thing on ClipChamp, which is fantastic. Now you're
I'm going to be doing more soon.
Are you? What are you doing now?
What
do you remember? Because you recorded ahead of time, so you may not know. Kevin probably knows.
I don't remember what I do anymore. I'm doing more tomorrow, but I, let me see what the last ones I did were, but well, I did a moment of Copilot's tips and tricks, Windows 11 fixes and workarounds, top nice. Five Windows 11 inbox apps.
You should be subscribing to that. Email apps. That's a great show. You should be subscribing to that. It's fantastic. What else? Is there anything else to say except, thank you for joining us. Thank you to our Club Twit members who make this show possible. Don't forget tomorrow, Stacy's Book Club. Club members, we'll see you there. 2 in the afternoon Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. We're going to talk about the real Dennis E. Taylor's incredible We Are Legion, the first book in the Babaverse series. It's very fun. And you know what? Even if you haven't started it yet, you could start right now and you would enjoy it. You might even stay up all night.
It's a romp of a book,
it's a
truly.
Romp. It's a kind of a nerdcore in the same vein as The Martian meets Ready Player One kind of a thing. Wow. It's good. A lot of sciencing. I guess I want to talk more, but I shouldn't because we're done. Thanks, Richard. Safe travels. Thank you, Paul. Stay where you are. Thank you, everybody else, for being here. We'll see you next week on Windows Weekly.
Hey, I'm Rod Pyle, Editor-in-Chief of Ad Astra Magazine, and each week I join with my co-host to bring you This Week in Space, the latest and greatest news from the final frontier. We talk to NASA chiefs, space scientists, engineers, educators, and artists, and sometimes we just shoot the breeze over what's hot and what's not in space books and TV. And we do it all for you, our fellow true believers. So whether you're an armchair adventurer or waiting for your turn to grab a slot in Elon's Mars rocket, join us on This Week in Space and be part of the greatest adventure of all time.